Ash is not going to hand around his Mentos.
They're my Mentos. That's why I was annoyed.
Welcome to another Seven Land Hand
Extra.
Extra.
Hey, did you know that the term G is Dublin slang for female genitalia?
I didn't know that.
We're preaching empty G, like nuns at a prostitute convention.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Today is all about tuning yourself up for tournaments, with or without an empty G, or a big D.
Set yourself free. Welcome to Seven Land Hand Congregation.
All of this, flavor text, MTG so card quiz, listener feedback, and news on the huge Good Games St. James competition.
All praise be to Thundermore Jesus.
Yeah, just back from tournament play, my co-host, Aaron the Big G Graham.
I do have a huge vagina.
So true.
That's where I got that nickname from. Right.
And today, our guest expert, the unstoppable Ash of the Whip Webster, father of Akuta, the Ash Zealot himself, ashes to ashes, amen, his name's Ash.
I am an Ashen Rider as well.
I've had a bit of a ride on the Ash.
Gentlemen, how are we? Oh, Aaron, have you ever played a bone to Ash?
I've applied a bone to Ash once or twice.
How did it go? Was it successful?
It was all right. Yeah.
You weren't my first.
No, I was talking about the card. Ooh.
Oh,
that's what I was talking about.
That's
well.
Also what. Yeah, me too. Also what I was talking about.
Yeah. Oh man,
I love to counter target creature spells and then draw a card afterwards.
Yeah.
By boning Ash.
Yeah. Anyway, does GP play sound creepy to you guys now?
GP play, like playing with your general practitioner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you took it a different way. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
That's a little dirty. GP. There we go.
Sorry. Drop.
Yeah. Slow on the uptake.
Cool. Well, that was introduction. Okay, so today we're talking about tournaments and magic tournaments.
What are
mainly,
tournaments?
Because it's magic extra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are tournaments? Ash and Aaron, what are they about?
Do you know what a tournament is, David?
Isn't that knights and jousting and stuff like that?
So you get, two guys on a horse, a lady, generally a king.
And they all bring their decks.
Some long sticks, and then you bring your decks and
put all the other shit away.
Cut to top eight.
Yeah. So what happens? What happens at this tournament? Like, everyone's disappearing over Roost for tournaments. Everyone's saying, I've got a tournament on this weekend.
So the magic tournament scene is pretty large. It spans all the way from casual pickup magic tournaments all the way up to the pro tour. Yeah. And in between there is about 10 to 15 different levels. Oh, I don't know if I'm just exaggerating.
You just made a number there, didn't you?
10 to 15.
How many numbers have you got, Ash?
Tournaments
in between.
Just a number.
Probably
69 levels in between.
Number.
Once you... Once you start playing at the kitchen table at home, it's not generally sanctioned, which sanctioned means...
There you go. What's sanctioned?
Sanctioning is when Wizards of the Coast say, we acknowledge that you're running this event. We'll help you out by running the event in some way. We'll put the event through our point system. We'll put it on our event locator so that people can find that event and be aware of it. So that's what sanctioning is. It just means that it's an official Magic the Gathering tournament.
Yeah.
So the lowest level sanctioned tournaments you can have are just like casual ones. You can go into your store, ask them to sanction your commander game, and they'll put it online for you. We don't really get a lot of that happening because it takes a little bit of effort and you don't really get the points for anything other than just looking at them.
Participating.
Yeah.
Because drafts are sanctioned, aren't they? But they're not a tournament.
They are a kind of tournament, actually. Okay. It's an eight-person tournament. You don't get many participation points for playing. So the Planeswalker points
You're
thing...
You're kidding
me. I'm sure... you get one.
I've been diligently making sure that I was registered. So I must have like about six DCI points now.
Yeah. If you've won... If you just participated in six drafts and didn't win a game, you'll have six DCI points now.
Sweet.
Well done.
I mean, 394 and you get your buy at GP Sydney.
Yeah, I think I got 738 last season. So
did
I was third or fourth in the state.
I feel like we're comparing sizes of things.
I got
now.
380 from one tournament.
Oh, that's that's all right.
We'll get back
that's,
to you in a minute.
That's up there. I haven't heard of that one. No, I don't think anyone has.
So those are local tournaments. Friday Night Magic is your regular
Friday Night Magic's
weekly.
The pinnacle of the
regular tournament.
Sanctioned tournament scene. It's week. It's every Friday. You've got standard or draft going on. Sometimes two headed giant. Some places around the world do sealed or modern FNM would be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But stuff. It ranges from just like eight person pickup draft to. Friday Night Magic, and then past that, which is the regular rules enforcement level, you've got the competitive events, which are Grand Prix trials, which can win you buys for Grand Prix. Grand Prix, which are large public events where anyone can go that wants to play Magic and just have fun.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they range from 600 to like 1,500 people. They had one in America that was 4,300 people.
The last one in Melbourne was 900, and that was the biggest one in Australia,
which is the biggest Australian GP ever. And then New Zealand ones are generally really small. Southeast Asian ones are usually a little bit bigger than Australian ones.
But and still, then, but the event of it all, it's fun to go to, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
like,
of course.
Just like, for what level, whatever level of play you're at.
Yeah, if there's a Grand Prix near you and you play Magic, you go play in the Grand Prix because it's just like there's heaps of side events on. There's hundreds and hundreds of people to trade with and chat to. There's celebrities, artists from the game. So people come along to the Grand Prix, not even to play in the main event, just to do a draft on the side after they finish work, taking the atmosphere, taking the sights, sounds, and smells.
Yes.
Yeah. And
I love the smells.
There are a few smells. But it's just a lot of fun. Like, I couldn't recommend Grand Prix more. They're the biggest public event that you can go to, though. Past Grand Prix, depending how... If you do well at Grand Prix or you win other competitive level events, which are called PTQs, they qualify you for the Pro Tour, which is the highest echelon.
PTQ being Pro Tour qualifier?
Pro Tour qualifier.
Yeah.
The Pro Tour is the highest echelon of the competitive Magic scene. It's what every competitive Magic player is trying to get to.
Yeah.
You win a share of like $50,000. Oh, not a share of $50,000.
Yeah, $50,000. 40 grand for first place.
40 grand for
just
first
share
place.
Share it yourself.
$25,000 for second.
Lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of prizes on the line at the Pro Tour, and they're in fantastic locations around the world. They just had one in Valencia in Spain in this amazing convention center. Right,
and those are the ones we'd see streaming on off Wizard's site and stuff like that.
They're the biggest deals, and they do a lot of coverage for them. And anyone who wins a Pro Tour is an immediate Magic celebrity. Like, I know most of the people that have won the Pro Tours in the last 3 or 4 years and what decks they played and stuff. It's just that's what you play Magic for. You want to go to the Pro Tour.
They,
you want to be
a pro. How do
they
maintain being on the Pro Tour as well? Is it just a matter of just placing well, re-qualifying, getting in there?
They have a lot of different things in place to help you keep playing on the Pro Tour. And if you keep playing concurrent Pro Tours, is that the word?
I don't know. It depends what you're trying to say.
a lot of Pro Tours in a row.
Oh, yeah.
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 getting on the Pro Tour train.
Yeah. Getting on the train, which means that you're going
to... We did trains last week, Ash. Stay out of this.
You're
a fortnight late.
Yes, being on the Pro Tour train, I think it's if you finish in the top 25 of the Pro Tour, you get an invite to the next one.
Right.
Also, if you are a particular pro club level, like every place that you get at a good place that you get at a Grand Prix and at a Pro Tour, you win pro points. And the higher your pro points are for a season or a year, they give you different benefits. Like, you get an invite to the Pro Tour. Sometimes they pay for your flight. Sometimes they pay for your hotel accommodation. Sometimes they pay you appearance fees, depending on how much of a kind of name celebrity you are in the community. And really, that's the highest that you can get. Like, platinum level pros get paid to go to these large events.
Because they know people are going to show up and they're going to see Lewis Scott Vargas there. And want to say, hey, what does he look like in real life?
Yeah.
I want to be there. I want to see him. This is like any other Pro Tour sport.
And it's a draw card to make people go, you know. Like, they're celebrities. You go to a Grand Prix and see pros there. You're like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's cool.
When they crush you in some side event. Yeah.
So it starts right from your local store
where
you're drafting to Friday Night Magic to Grand Prix to Pro Tour qualifiers to the Pro Tour. It's like there's an obvious ladder, stairway to heaven.
Yeah.
Stairway to Magic heaven there.
Stairway to the Pro Tour.
Stairway to the Pro Tour. Mm-hmm. And do you know anyone who might have done well in a recent
Grand Prix? Recently we flew over to the Grand Prix in Melbourne. It was a lot of fun. It was a standard format event. We had all of our Perth guys together kind of working on decks.
Wasn't there. hasn't. No,
all of the Perth guys that we like were there.
anyone that can play. I keep sleeving my cards in backwards, and I don't know what they are.
You're not
all
invited.
Same magic.
Not invited to the Grand Prix.
I'm working on that.
We had a good group of us. A lot of people we roped into going for the first time, like people that I playtest with and stuff. And it was just nice having a big group of Perth people go over. We had about 20 to 25 of us there.
Yeah.
We got some really nice...
sweet pictures.
Yeah, group photos of us over there. Adventure. And it was just a really enjoyable weekend because you're all there for a reason. And you're all mates because you play Magic and stuff all the time. And you've got this common interest and everyone always wants everyone else to do well in the group. Yeah. So it was good to go over and represent Perth over there. And we had a few of us do very well.
Yeah.
Paul Jackson, store sponsored. Yeah. And Anthony
that's
Lee.
That's Good Games.
That's Good Games. Good Games St. James. James.
You know what I didn't say in the introduction? Anyway, moving right along.
Whoops. Oh, God. Oh, no.
We can make it up now.
We can reinsert
it. Good Games St. James sponsored player. Paul Jackson.
Yeah. This podcast is also brought to you by Good Games St. James.
Oh, it is, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Delightful people at Good Games St. James.
He made day two along with Anthony Lee, who managed to do a deck tech.
Anthony Lee of Intro Deck Challenge fame and the
PTQ winner.
PTQ Atlanta
going to the Pro Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
He made day two as well with a black-white brew of his that got a deck tech online, so you can go and watch him presenting that deck online.
I haven't seen that, actually.
So, anyone else make it a day two? Craig Chapman was another
Perth player. He did very well. He ended up playing Anthony Lee's deck on the last day. He lent me some cards, and then I had to give them back to him because he changed his thing.
Lad.
Oh, no, it worked out. I think he traded for some, so I got to keep them anyway. He ended up making the top eight along with one other Perth player, Ash Webster.
Oh, Ash of the Whip.
Ash of the Whip Webster.
Unstoppable Ash.
Ash, the when zealot. Did you start playing Magic?
Well, Aaron.
So how did you do, Ash?
Well, Dave, I ended up making the top eight as well.
How was your day one first?
My day one. In day one, there was 9 rounds in day one, a 15-round tournament. I ended up having one bye due to Planeswalker points. So you get 400 Planeswalker points. You get a bye to Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my first free win. I ended up going 7 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw. Happened actually versus Anthony Lee in round 4.
Yeah, out of 900 players.
Out of 900 players, we ended up versing in round 4. He had 3 buys just naturally from like win PTQ and stuff like that.
Yeah, when you win a PTQ, you get like 1,000 players points, which pretty much guarantees you 3 buys.
Wow. So yeah, we're both playing.
Do those points get used up when you get? Do you cash them in for buys,
no,
or are they just
you
good
don't,
for a year?
So what they do is, if you get it's 400, 750, and 1500 for 1, 2, and 3 buys respectively. If you have that in a season, any Grand Prix you go to that season or the next season, you get that many buys for.
Wow.
So the next Grand Prix we're going to, I think, is Sydney in August. But it's 2 seasons away, so our points from...
Oh, so how long is the season then?
The season is 3 months. It's every 3 months, yeah.
Wow. And the best way to accrue big points, like you're saying, I'll have accrued pretty much nothing from my drafting efforts. Yeah. So it's what, Friday Night Magic?
For each of the different levels of events, you get a multiplier. So every win is still 3 points, but the multiplier of the event can be bigger. So for Friday Night Magic, it's 1x multiplier. If you draft, it's 1x multiplier. If you play a Grand Prix trial, it's 3x.
Yeah.
If you play a PTQ, it's 5x. And if you play in an actual Grand Prix, it's 8x.
Oh, boy.
So every win that you get at a Grand Prix is 24 points.
Yeah.
And I didn't do very well at Grand Prix KL. I went 5-4, and it was still enough for me to get
a buy.
One buy at Melbourne. Yeah.
Yeah. So you walked in and you already had a buy.
Yeah. Right. There's been a few like Grand Prix trials where you obviously get the multiplier, so you get a bit more points. I did fairly all right in those. I won the Grand Prix trial for KL, so that was a bunch of points for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's a shame you didn't end up going. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I really, really wanted to go. Just didn't. Obviously, events didn't turn out the way I wanted them to. Yeah. I didn't get to go, but yeah. Anyway, so
yeah. So you showed.
I had the buy.
So you had the buy, and so that was like day one.
Yeah.
So how did you get through day one? You beat Anthony Lee. Was that?
Well, what happened is we ended up playing in the fourth round, both undefeated. So we ended up actually coming to a draw. We ran out of time. It wasn't even an unintentional draw. Which is never a good thing that early in a tournament, because a draw is more or less a loss at that point. I ended up playing a few more games, having a few more wins. Ended up playing the guy that ended up winning the full tournament.
Okay.
Like round seven, Sung Wook Nam. Yeah.
You smashed him. From South Korea.
We at least played three games in that, in that game, and he ended up taking it from me with a quadruple grey merchant.
So he cheated.
So we played four grey merchants against you.
In four consecutive turns, which is quite disheartening.
To seal the game.
Yeah, it was quite sad.
That's pretty brutal, that.
I ended up winning the rest of the games that day, so I ended up 7-1-1.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty impressive record for day one of your first Grand Prix.
It's not bad.
So I ended up 22nd overall after the first day, which was pretty exciting.
Really good.
Yeah. So you go to bed nervous that night, thinking...
Yeah, because you've got to be back at 9 a.m. sharp, finishing at like 11 o'clock playing, something like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, the worst thing was me and my friend Wyatt, we organised to go see a comedian, and it just happened to be that Saturday night between the 2 days. And I was like, oh, it's just my first Grand Prix, it doesn't matter. I won't make a day for failure. I'll just go out, have some fun. I don't want to miss out. This is a comedian I really want to see. So I went and saw that. Didn't get home until about 12:30.
Right.
I was bed for like one, maybe two. And then to be up at like 7:30 the next day, which is not a good idea. I wouldn't do that again.
Nasty.
Right.
But you ended up winning the first couple rounds on day two. First three rounds?
First five rounds on
day two.
Right.
Yeah. There was a little bit of luck involved.
I wasn't unlucky, put it that way.
Yeah. Don't take it away from him. He just wasn't unlucky.
Yeah. I think in the third last round, you got a feature match, because Craig Chapman was speaking to one of the coverage guys, Randy Bueller, saying, you want a story for the feature match for them to talk about? This guy's been playing Magic for like 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
Get him in the feature match area, and you played a pro tour player from Melbourne. Luke Mulcahy.
I was watching the coverage, and they're talking about him. He's been on a few pro tours, and they're talking about Ash might know who he is, and obviously I had no idea who he was.
He's got no idea.
probably this guy's important in the Australian Magic scene, but maybe 6 months. I don't know any Australian pro players.
Yeah. Not anymore. Get out of the way. You're history. You're sitting in my chair.
Yeah,
that was quite nerve wracking actually, playing on camera. Especially that deep into the tournament, you know.
Yeah, and the games were intense intense. They weren't just like someone just gets a nut draw and just rolls the opponent. The game three went down to the wire. It was like Ash was on like one, and there was a very specific set of circumstances that had to happen. It was awesome to watch like live at the time. It was a lot
of
fun. Is
that the one that's still online? You can still find it.
Yeah, you can still find that one. Yeah. That's at twitch.tv/magic. Just go back and look at their archives for Grand Prix Melbourne. It's about an hour into the footage.
An hour or two into the footage.
It's really worth a watch. It's a lot of fun.
Ash thinks it's about an hour into
about
the footage.
About an hour and 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, whatever. Watched it 15 times. That was the second last round for the day, round 14, I think. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much from my top eight. So at the time, I was 11 wins, one loss, one draw. So to make the top eight, you have to go X wins, two losses, one draw at worst. Gets you into the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I was X1-1. So by winning that with only one round to go, it didn't matter if I lost or won it or draw it or whatever. I was in the top eight. So that was super exciting, having won that round and then being able to...
So you can have an intentional draw with your opponent, because it benefits you both to both be in the top eight. There's no real reason why you would play the last round unless you really want to knock the other person out. That would be super harsh.
Yeah, well, sometimes people play because it's like the play-draw rule.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's not
the higher you finish in the top eight, you get to play anyone who's lower than you get to be able to play.
Sort of ranking.
You don't roll any dice, you're just automatically on the play.
But I think making the top eight and guaranteed at least $1,000 cash...
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Top eight is pretty sweet.
So the top eight's that day as well, though.
Yep, straight.
Yeah, right. What sort of time is that start? Do you get an hour break?
I was sort of like take your photo and you do player profile and stuff like that.
So you got a bit of time to
a
sit down
of time,
and hug Marshall from Limited Resources. Yeah. And like that.
Yeah. So you give you is so the meal breaks or anything like that in between
no,
matches?
There's
it's just
no lunch
you arrive at nine,
at
start playing.
Day one, I bottled out fairly early. I guess we can talk about that later. Yeah. But I was ferrying food and drinks to another friend of ours, Sam.
Yeah.
Got very close to contending for day two as well, but just got knocked out
in
the second last round.
Yeah. Right.
But I was just ferrying food and drink to everyone that was still going because I left after round four or something.
So what time of the day do you get the hour break?
So that hour was after the last round of the day.
Yeah, which is what sort of time?
It was probably about 5, 6 o'clock.
That's a big
yeah,
shift
it was about 6 o'clock, yeah.
That's like
so
9 hours.
So we've been playing for 9 hours already.
Right.
Plus 10, 11 hours a day before.
And these would be all timed still, like we do in the store?
Yeah,
like
so they're 50-minute rounds,
yeah.
Plus extra time.
And is the final eight timed, or is it just the final?
No, I believe it's not timed. It's just go as long as...
Top eight's not timed. It's just you're expected to play at a
reasonable
pace.
It's taking a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Mostly for coverage, because people are just watching and you're just sitting there.
Yeah. I got told to hurry up in my semi-finals when I was staring at 4 pack rats on the field. I'm like, what just happened? I was winning this game. And then he's like, hurry up. I was like, oh.
Well, go.
Yep, scoop. Next game.
So the final eight starts, and how do you get your pairings?
As soon as they announce the top eight, first plays eighth, second plays seventh.
Okay.
Third place sixth, fourth place fifth.
I thought that was what you were saying before, is that you can play to try and improve your rankings.
Yeah, exactly. If you hire up, you get to play, which is super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But from as soon as they read that out, another Perth player, Craig Chapman, also made the top eight.
Yeah.
Had a really good run at the end of the second day, as well as Ash. Made the top eight, but as soon as they ran it out, we knew that the two Perth players were going to be playing because you ended up second or third?
Yeah, I was second and Craig ended up
second in
seventh.
Swiss, and Craig came in at seventh, so we're like, oh shit. Perth players playing immediately in the top eight, so one of them is going to get knocked out in the quarterfinals.
So how did you go with against Craig then?
Against Craig?
Yeah.
Again, on camera,
match.
Another feature
two Perth
match.
Players,
yes. Yeah.
I ended up taking the first game pretty quickly. I can't remember. I just had cards and he had other cards and my cards beat his cards.
I think you just out-carded advantage him because you've got...
Yeah, I had a fairly decent
The red-green-black deck you were playing has a lot of kind of incidental stuff that generates a lot of advantages.
Yeah, a lot of one-for-ones. Mm-hmm. Like trading one card for one card and I just had more card advantage and just end up having a win.
Mm-hmm.
The game two, I kept like a little bit of a sketchy hand. It was like a two-lander with Sylvan Carrotid, mana acceleration and some good four drops. But Craig ended up seeing through that and was able to devour flesh, which means I have to sacrifice my Sylvan Carrotid. So I was stuck on two lands and he just played a couple of Brimazes.
Got beat down by Brimaz.
Ended up just losing to out tempo. And in game three.
He means Charging Badger, doesn't
charging
he?
Charging Badger,
yeah.
Sorry. Powerful Grand Prix top eight competitor. <That's
it. laughs> Everyone's playing it. It's captured the hearts and minds of Magic players everywhere.
Yeah.
And game three?
Game three was, just. Game, nothing really happened.
So game three, again, also worth watching on the coverage. Craig plays a whip, doesn't have his fifth land. Ash decides to Rakdos's return him, which makes Craig discard his hand, one of which is an Obsidat, which he whips back with Whip of Erebos, giving it haste and lifelink. And Ash is in a very bad position here. Everyone around expects him to lose. Craig keeps attacking with this hasty 5/5 that drains his opponent for two every time it comes in. While gaining him five life from attacking, Ash just has to keep chump blocking to not die. She goes to about 7 or 8 life. Craig's on like 40.
45 or something, or like 6.
Yeah. And then Ash won, so that was good. But okay, so
what was the card that turned the... Was there a card?
So
was there a moment?
There was a specific turn. Craig's probably been thinking about this constantly.
Yeah.
Where Craig could have whipped another creature back and killed Ash on the... next turn.
Let's go, yeah.
But he didn't see it that turn. Drew his card and said go because he was just drawing removal spells. Ash played a Garruk, which you reveal the top 5 cards of your library, put all the creatures into your hand and the rest on the bottom. And Ash played 3 creatures that turn, one of which he could sacrifice
to the demon.
Yeah, he just had heaps and heaps of mana. And then eventually he drew enough chump blockers to throw in front of Obsidat that the life total became irrelevant because you ultimated Garruk and then kept playing creatures
Garruk. First thing was grab a Scavenging Ooze.
Yeah.
At the time I'm thinking, how do I interact with this Whip Obsidat combo? You know, even if I kill Obsidat, he just whips it back and just does that infinitely. And I just had a way of a win. And then it dawned on me, like, I have a card called Scavenging Ooze, which means I can eat a creature card from his graveyard and then it exiles it. So I think if I can get opposite that into the graveyard, I could eat it and then you can't keep whipping it back.
And it's also just kind of incidental life gain.
And there's a life gain because Craig had also, like, killed two of my Stormbreath Dragons and two Corsair Crucifixes.
So you've got
a bunch of creatures.
A very small amount of things to kill them with in your deck.
Yeah, so I ended up getting a bit of life there just to sort of keep me in the game. Got myself up to about the 9-10 mark. Hopefully not, you know, not getting blown out by anything. And then I was able to... Well, anyway, when Garrick ultimates, when you put a creature into play, you can search your library for a creature and put that
put it into play as well.
All right. So I had two Elvish Mystics in my hand at the time, off Garrick plus one-ing. So I played Elvish Mystic, got a Scavenging Ooze. And a few turns later, I was able to start getting some couple of Corsair Crucifixes on the field, which is whenever you play a land, you gain a life. So whenever I played a land, I had two on the field at the time, I was gaining two life. So I was gaining two life from that, life from Scavenging Ooze.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was able to start creating sort of a little bit of a combo.
So Ash is drawing more and more things to throw onto the board while his opponent's just drawing removal spells for like one or two things.
Right.
And it ended up just overwhelming
him.
Played a Stormbreath, got another Stormbreath out of your deck.
Yeah.
Ultimated one. You just had so much mana by this point. Ultimated one. Oh no, monstrous one.
Monstrous.
He's like, kill it. And Ash is like, okay, I'm monstrous my other one then. as well.
You for 25.
You for 25. And so his opponent's like, yeah, cool, go to 25.
Every time I've heard about this match, it sounds like you're on about like turn 58 by now. But the whole match went about 13, 14 rounds.
Yeah,
is that
it
would have
been maybe turn 14, 15 when it ended
but
up.
But the deck can just That's do some insane. Explosive stuff.
Yeah, I was probably playing, it started off maybe one or two things a turn. By the end of it, I was playing like eight cards a turn.
Yeah.
Like, just absolute crazy with all my planeswalkers.
At this stage of the podcast, Aaron's taking control of Ash's Mentos and is helping himself.
They're mine.
Not anymore.
They're mine. Anyway, so he beat Craig.
Yeah.
Top four at a Grand Prix means you go into the Pro Tour. If you come top four at a Grand Prix, you also get invites, flights to the Pro Tour if you weren't already qualified.
Yeah.
Still waiting for Wizards to email me about that. It's a bit awkward. It's been a while.
Wizards, if you're out there listening, as I know we know you do, get in touch with Ash. Contact us here at @7landhand. Tweet us.
Well, you could probably just email Ash.
No, don't worry about it.
Don't worry. No,
we'll take it. We'll sort it out. Yeah. We're the administrative office in front of Ash. He just lounges around by the pool all day.
Yeah. Drinking cocktails.
And Mr. Webster, there's a call for you on line 3. It's Wizards of the Coast. We're getting a Pro Tour invite.
Really? Yeah, Tell them I'll call them back.
Come on, mate. Yeah.
Having a massage.
Yes.
All right.
Aaron.
And then he lost to some guy that won the Pro Tour that he had played earlier in the tournament. Remember that guy?
That cheating guy.
The guy
with
that quadruple grey merchant me came back.
And we don't like him.
Triple pack ratted me. And it was good fun. Like, and I had fun. Magic.
On camera, got crushed.
If you're listening out there, and we know you do as well, we want to fight you.
Sung Wook Nam.
Yeah.
Come on the podcast.
We'll fight you. We'll fight you on the podcast. So should we put that on the end of pod criteria? We're going to fight
Sung Wook Nam on the podcast?
Yeah. That'd be great. I'm sure listeners would love that.
Seriously, he's a really nice guy.
We still want to fight him, though, don't we?
Yeah.
Played his deck very consistently, very well.
Yeah.
Very nice dude. First South Korean to win a Grand Prix ever. So
good.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Tournament preparation. So at the top of any sport, game or contest, there's always fractions of a percent between the great and those that have been forgotten. I always think about this when I'm watching some sort of sporting event and you think there's those, you know, everybody, like if you watch NBA basketball or English Premier League, they're all amazing. I mean, even those guys that you think are crap, they're amazing players. And the difference between them and the ones that are superstars is only like a tiny percent. So talent is a very small fraction of that. Hard work is a huge percentage of being successful, and recognizing your body as well as a vehicle which will transport you to victory encapsulates each of those factors of success. Now, even like before this podcast, I was listening to Alex Ferguson's autobiography,
and
he quoted in that, he said, the secret to success is just graft, you know, just like it's just hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And a podcast I was listening to in this week as well was Penn Jillette, Penn Sunday
From,
School.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was saying he said that he has absolutely zero talent. What he has is patience and perseverance. And that's the only thing that's made him successful. Yeah. You know, and he's probably taken a bit tongue-in-cheek. You know, he's quite talented in many respects. But,
yeah,
but But yeah, there's a constant message, and you know, I was just like listening out for that kind of stuff this week, and I was like, man, this is what we're talking about in the pod this week. Wow. So now everyone will say, well, I was listening to Alex Ferguson's, I was listening to Penn's Sunday School, and I was listening to Seven Land Hand. They all said the same thing.
Yeah, they all say
it's all in the same conversation.
Yeah. So we've broken this down into three sections, which is talent, hard work, and tuning the machine is what I've called that bit. I don't know why, I just couldn't think of another thing. But that's all about health and stuff. So talent... talent, I kind of broke it down to from where you sit now, there's pretty much nothing you can do about raw talent. You've got all the raw talent that you're ever going to have.
Aaron.
That's it.
But,
you know, you can. I think, there's things for magic, you know, like mathematical aptitude or some strategic aptitude, and just identifying if you have got those natural talents, that can be good for your confidence. But don't be too upset if you're not built to be a great player, like. At least one of us in this room of three.
That's me.
Yeah, that's Aaron. So hard work and preparation, you know, forms the majority of the journey between today and the Pro Tour, which we heard about earlier on.
Yeah.
So, hard work. How do we go about it? What do we do in preparing work-wise for a tournament? I've never done any of this.
So we've covered talent already?
Talent's covered.
You got it or you don't?
You got it or you don't.
It's nice to acknowledge, but... it's really not that important in the big scheme of things.
Not really.
Raw talent, no.
As you can see between me and Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron is much more talented
I'm not going to do that.
Forget about talent. Hard work.
So
preparing yourself for a tournament.
The difference between the most talented players and the hardest working players in Magic, I think, is the speed at which...
this is the guy who has done no preparation.
but you're on the right line. Like, talent is more like how quickly you can understand and apply what you've learned.
So some players that you teach for the first time pick it up really fast. That's the talent speaking, how quickly they pick it up. But some people work at it and work at it and work at it, and then they get it. And then they know it not because they've been told it and they can take that information, but because they've processed it so many times in so many different situations that they know how to reapply it to different situations in the future, as opposed to just being told it. So the talent in Magic comes from being able to recognize it quickly, but it might not even be the best thing. If you can recognize it quickly, you might take heuristics, take shortcuts that...
But I would say, being able to recognize it quickly isn't a talent. It's something you have to work at, because from set to set, the cards change.
Same
models of, you know, it's like you get a card out in one set versus a card that came out several sets ago, and they kind of do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's still recognizing what that card can do and being able to apply that changes all the time. So,
yeah, of course. I'm talking specifically from blank slate. Like if you aren't particularly intelligent, you aren't going to get Magic the first time you play it.
Oh yeah, well, I'm experiencing that right now.
but some people really do just pick it up very fast, whether it's from application of strategy from other games that they've played. I don't know, they were good at chess or some other card game or something, and then they can reapply that knowledge. That's not exactly talent. It's just... it's hard work that they've applied to something else. But some people come in with vaguely any knowledge and they just get some of it. And some of the players that you see nowadays just pick it up really fast, but it's really not important. Mm-hmm. It's more important how you apply yourself and applying yourself.
Yeah, I think there's regular themes of stuff, you know, just like talking about other areas which I know a bit, you know, not better than the Magic stuff. I was listening to English football. I could watch a documentary recently, and I'm not going to make it pro one team or another so people will turn off or anything, but they were talking about certain players that all started out together. There were certain stars amongst them, you know, who just rocked up. They've been playing since they were a kid. They could really play and all that sort of stuff. And one person who I knew as a player who mm-hmm. became famous was talking about someone who I'd never heard of before and never got further than his teens because he stopped working at that point in time. Mm-hmm. He was just like, I'm done. This is me. I'm great. You know, job's done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the guy that was a superstar, he was just like, shit, I've got to put up with that. I've got to compete with that.
Yeah.
I'd better start working hard.
Yeah.
And he did. And he, you know, he managed to operate at a really high level in the game
mm-hmm.
just through pure work, you know, just working hard. And I think that translates to like just about anything.
Yeah, like you can be born with a really nice bone structure that makes you play football better.
But yeah, there's always that entry criteria. You know, like, you know, for magic, you've got to have a certain level of intelligence to be able to pull it off. But I think once you get into that pool, that pool is pretty big, and those people that rise above that level, you know, you got to put the work in.
You can't put in zero effort in magic and expect to do well, which is a thing. Like working in a store, people come up to you and go, "I need tips. I need ways to play my deck better. How do I do it?" And you give them some hints and you give them some tips and you say, "This is how I would do this if you come across this situation," and they can take some of it on board, but not. But you can't just be told
as a new player. Yeah, I find, as I'm getting advice, I just want like the. I can get a lot of tips thrown at me, and you know, say, right, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And it's just like trying to formulate how those, you know, common themes of mistakes that come up.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, if you're, you know, a new player, it's just go, all right, there's a lot of things going on. I can hear the same message coming through. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to grab onto that, and the rest can go into the fog of advice for a while.
Yeah.
And I'll focus on doing this one theme correctly from now on. Locked away and then move on.
One problem is that magic players speak in very black and white terms. They say, this is good, this is bad. This is good, this is bad.
Always do this, never do this.
It's never like, works. Always wait the last moment until casting your removal spell. It's not right. It's a good rule of thumb, I guess.
Sudden storm.
It's not that too late. Yeah.
Sudden storm.
Sudden storm is an example of that.
But sometimes you need a sudden storm on turn four.
Like, yeah, no, but I'm saying do it before they attack. You know, if you wait, right, they're attacked. Oh, they've already tapped.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. It's all about context of like what situation.
Yeah. So I think on limited resources, especially, they speak about when you get good at limited, you take all those rules and you apply them. Just blanket those rules over everything.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you a good player. How you become a great player is knowing when to bend and break those rules. So it's just, I've played some terrible cards in draft that people say, never play this. Literally never put it in your deck. But you need a 2-drop. You need a 3-drop. And you go, this is what's going to work. Bronze Sable. We all laughed at a guy in the store because he played 3 Bronze Sable in his deck. But he needed 2-drops. To support the rest of the pump spells that had drafted, went 3-0, crushed everyone.
Yeah.
Because it's about acknowledging that the rules are there to be bent and broken, and people that just ignore the fact that they can be bent and broken are much worse players.
Yeah, the analogy I always use for that, because it comes up in, because I write as well, and I like to play guitar, but I always think of the same analogy for guitar playing, in that, you know, if you improvise the blues along with some music that's in a certain key, what sounds okay and works is staying in key. You add something that's out of key, just like one note or something, and break the rules, and then knowing where to return to makes it sound cool. All of a sudden, that has character, that what you've just played, and it has a bit of... that's where the beauty comes in, because you've broken the rules.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same with this, I think, as well. It's like the really clever plays and stuff are when you know how to break the rules.
Unconventional plays and that sort of thing.
It's going to surprise your opponent, but it's knowing when to do them. I mean, you can't just play haphazard.
Mm-hmm. So the hard work in magic is quite specifically... I think what it boils down to is you just got to play a lot. And... whether that's the limited format that you want to be good at. If you want to be good at draft, you just got to draft a bunch. You can't...
I'm talking about tournament play, though. Like tournament.
If you want to do well at a sealed Grand Prix, you've got to build a bunch of sealed pools. You can't just be told what's good and just expect that to be... Because, you know, if you open...
You may never see those cards.
Yeah, like if you open a sealed pool with Elspeth, but not that good white support... Do you play Elspeth? You don't know unless you've got content. Obviously, people telling you, you can't build a million seal pools and know for sure. So you've got to take some information, but it is also about building your knowledge base yourself.
Just for having tried to draft a lot more recently, I feel more comfortable with the cards in the set because you see a wider variety of cards, and sometimes you find yourself playing cards which you'd never play with, and that teaches you how they can be used against you, and also teaches you how you can use them. So if they become part of a standard deck, I guess then you kind of recognize what might be occurring within the game. I'm sure it's a bit more complicated than that, though, isn't it? Because in standard you can force combinations quite a lot easier. You know, your deck has a narrative to it.
You can discern what an opponent's playing by the first 3 lands they play.
Yeah.
And deck lists in standard, because they get so focused, it's pretty easy to find out what strategy they're going to be playing. There can only be so many
three drop spells that a blue white deck is playing, because you know what to expect. You know,
because that's
what
it, isn't it? There's
open
the set,
mana
the
represents
set decks, like you know, when you're starting Magic, you just think, oh, I'll just build my own deck and there we go, I'll just take that to the tournament. But there's people out there that have been testing and find the ideal combination of cards, and they're playing with those, so that's hence you can recognize them.
Yeah,
and I understand a few people at Melbourne had a few homebrew kind of decks and that caught a few people off guard. Is that right?
First of all, tell us how you came up with, or tell us the process that you went through to get to the deck that you ended up playing and doing well at the Grand Prix with.
All right, sure. Well, I played green-red a version of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So the green-red monsters came out like before Born of the Gods came out. It was a list at one of the Asian Grand Prix, made the top eight, and then it sort of became a bit more popular towards the end of Theros. When Born of the Gods came out, a couple of new cards were added to it. Xenogod, God of Revels, and also Corsair of Crucifix. Just sort of a bit more consistency and card advantage based cards.
Yeah.
From there, like, I really like the list, but I felt that I was lacking in specific matchups, such as the mono black matchup. That deck is just a lot of control. And
so, so this is a part of tournament preparation, knowing what to expect when you go
definitely.
To the, what to expect when you're expecting.
In preparation, like half of it is being able to like sort of figure out the current metagame. So you know, by previous Grand Prix, previous major tournaments, you have a look, see which lists are popular. From there, like being able to judge what lists you think will be popular in the metagame that you're going to is, you know, a skill that you need to have.
So how do you judge what the metagame is out in the wider world? Because you can do it like what's going
easier,
in
yeah,
store,
yeah, in the shop,
but
you know the local players. But,
something we were struck by when we got to Melbourne was that the metagame was very different in Melbourne than it was at home, and so we had to change a lot of our decks to suit that. I was playing a black white mid range list that was built around a mono black shell, splashing white for some very powerful cards to beat mono black, because you expect mono black to be one of the best decks in standard.
Just won the rookie tournament, didn't it?
Rookie tournament. Just then. So you play stuff with protection from black, Blood Baron of Viscopa. You play threats that are difficult to deal with, like Obsidat and Elspeth. Things that can win you these like a wide variety of games. And then we hadn't really tuned. Anthony Lee came up with the deck. Hadn't really tuned it for the red-green monsters, because no one plays red-green monsters in Perth.
Yeah.
Like, it's not very popular. A few people play it, and it doesn't do too well at our tournaments, so we just kind of were like, that's not really a thing. We go to Melbourne, we play in the trials on the Friday, 50% of the decks were red-green.
At least. I think it was more, ended up being more
and
than
that. And you'd taken that deck with you, and you were like...
Well, at the time, I wasn't actually playing... I was playing a version of red-green. So for the Grand Prix trial for Melbourne...
This is on the Friday. They run small tournaments.
For the Good Games Grand Prix trial here in Perth.
Right.
I wanted to I take it fairly competitively and seriously, so I wanted to come up with a list I think would do well, so I can get those buys. Mm-hmm. And I decided, you know, from an SCG Open deck list, Star City Games Open, a guy played Green Red Monsters, but he had a Temple of Malice, which is the red black Skyland, just for instead of a mountain, so for a bit of extra scry. And when I looked at this, and I'm thinking, oh wow, this is actually. This could be really good, because green reds really lacks removal. Sometimes if I just replace the mountains with black sources, so like your Temple of Malice and your Blood Crypts, that way I can play some black removal spells in the sideboard, such as Ultimate Price,
which
is destroy target monocolored creature.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you're going to catch people out with that. Because, you know, having surprise...
Dreadbore in there? It's like red, black.
Dreadbore got there eventually.
Yeah.
But at the start, it was Ultimate Price, a couple of other cards like Raptor's Return.
But the scry is invaluable.
Oh,
like,
it's
like people
valuable.
Are realizing you can just put the scry lands in decks that don't need it.
Well, because the format slowed down so much. You have these weenie lists going around, so you can afford the scry lands.
I found just drafting it, like if I'm, you know, pack two or something like that, and there's a dual color card, scry land, come by and it's got one of the cards, I'm like, one of my colors, I'm like, oh my, like, I can play that. I can pick that pretty highly just because the scry is great. And if you get that in your opening hand, you're thinking, sweet, because there's not a lot of one drops.
Yeah.
So let's go have a look through the deck.
It's like a spell that doesn't take up a spell slot in your deck. All you have to do is play a land to play tapped one turn, which is sometimes not a downside.
Yeah.
Well, it's always a downside, but sometimes it's not a huge deal.
Certainly doesn't feel like a bad thing if you if you're playing at your first land and it's like you can't play a one drop, and you're probably looking at your hand, there isn't any, and then late in the game, you know, you can get those infinite mana.
And we're just lucky in standard that there aren't a lot of strategies that punish that.
Slower mana bases.
Yes, slower mana bases, which are usually run over by aggressive decks that go...
The red-white Boros deck disappeared now.
Yeah,
your white weenie lists and your mono blue's not quite as popular as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Which are all decks that can just run you over before you get a chance to stabilize with these powerful spells.
Yeah.
So you ended up coming to that list because of what you saw going on in around you at the event.
Out in the big wide world, yeah. I noticed this sort of like Temple of Manas. I decided to take that step further, play black in my list, just because it makes the mono black matchup slightly better, being able to deal with the desecration in, which just, I found was a massive problem for the list.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up top aiding that GPT, along with my friend who also played the same list as me.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, yeah, we're kind of onto something here. A week later, on the internet, a couple articles actually went up about. Not my list, but you know, other people had figured it out as well.
They were already talking about Ash Webster's list.
they were figured out.
This is what Ash is playing. We suspect he's about to
kind of top four. Ooh.
Yeah.
So they were talking about the green red splash back list, which is kind of disappointing because I was like, oh,
yeah,
this surprise factor now going into the GP. And then some guy went top aided, took it even further, and made it to Jund monsters, which is actually just like pretty much taking the black not as a splash anymore, but as a full on part of the list. And he did quite well in another Star City Games Open, I think the one before the GP. And so now everyone was on board, like knew about this green, red, black list, and it was sort of taking away the surprise element of it, which was quite disappointing, but you know, it happens. People realize it's a fairly decent archetype because it shores up so many of the bad matchups. But from there, yeah, I decided, I was still unsure until I got there because I was thinking about playing the black, white list that Aaron and Anthony were on. I played a little bit of it on the day I got there and realized it was. I just didn't like some of its matchups. I felt like it got ran over.
So
by
black
green
white is that still pretty strong in standard then?
It was more of a metagame choice.
Definitely a metagame choice.
Because you can play because it's good against everything. You kind of hedge your bets against mono black by playing three Blood Barons main. You're trying to hedge your bets against control by having lots of threats that are
three Obsidats main.
Separately difficult to deal with. Obsidat, Blood Baron, Brimaz,
Elspeth
all require very different.
They're all
answers.
Cards that can win the game on their own.
Yeah. So that was a good deck just against everything. And what we ended up doing was cutting Night Vale Spectres from the mono black shell, putting in the Lifebane Zombies in the main deck, which are usually like a sideboard card to beat up on green and white decks. But because we thought there'd be so much red green, the Lifebane Zombies, you bring them in, just exile their Polukranos from their hand on turn three before they can even cast it.
Yeah.
Like it just does enough against red green that you can just sideboard them out when it's useless, but just have them in the main deck so you can beat up what you think you're going to be up against the whole day.
And it's very good against Planeswalkers as well because it's got Intimidate, so you can kill that Xena Ghost straight away.
Yeah. So it's got all sorts of different applications against what you expect in the field. So
as a metagame, yeah.
Yeah. So that's very important in tournament preparation, what you think the metagame's going to be like, and also just playing enough games against those decks so you know what's good, what's bad, how to sideboard in each matchup, because it's just, you're going to be playing 10 rounds. God knows what you're going to be playing.
Yeah.
I managed to do enough testing against what we would expect, and the reason that I did so badly was because I didn't get enough time to test against just different genres of decks. So I didn't get to play against aggressive decks, and I played two aggressive decks in the first couple of rounds, and I just got run over by them because I didn't know how to play against them. I didn't know what to prioritize my removal against. I didn't know how to sideboard, and then I played against some ramp deck in round four. I wasn't expecting that either, and it's just I wasn't sure what to do, and that just comes from playtesting. I just didn't have enough time in the weeks beforehand, and I just got run over. So
it comes from playtesting and experience, and even that's what I also helped with my list because I sort of created it myself. I understood my sideboard plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the way every card was in there. Every good matchup it was. So I was never if I got into like those matchups like Aaron did, where you're versing some sort of unknown fringe homebrew list. You're like, okay, this card is good for this. This seems like it's going to be good in this particular matchup. I'm just going to bring it in. Like, you don't even have to worry about or think about sideboarding plans.
Yeah, whereas I didn't... I keep saying I didn't have too much time, but I maybe didn't prioritize my time correctly in, building my own sideboard. I copied someone else's list, asked them for advice.
Yeah.
But then, I wasn't sure... I might have tweaked it to make it more to suit my playstyle, and I just didn't really.
Well, it was something I was thinking about as well in preparing for this podcast as well. I was thinking, you can do all of these things and take them to the height, do the best you can at each of these areas of preparation. But you can also just be going to a tournament for fun as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Or you can be doing it like what you've done, where you've half and half to, you've not prioritized time to do as much testing as maybe Ash had done, but you know, you've got a pretty good idea around your deck, you're going to give it a good crack. And
but realistically, I know that the amount of time that I put in isn't going to put me in the top eight of a Grand Prix. It's going to, like, maybe I'll get lucky sometime, but like, I've been to four or five and I haven't day two'd yet because I don't put in the hours and the big heaps of effort that I know are required to do that well. You need to do that and you need to get lucky. Not taking anything away from you, obviously.
There was luck involved in me getting there.
Yeah, but you need luck. It's a game that involves luck.
Well, to get through 15 rounds of Magic.
Yeah. And only lose like one.
One game. Obviously it's a lot, very, very heavy skill based because you can't just fluke your way through 15 rounds.
No,
there is some amount of luck involved.
But you're minimizing your own luck by minimizing the amount of mistakes you're making.
That's quite why I liked my list because just the consistency of it.
Grinders are
Grinders are small Grand Prix trials, 32 player tournaments. As soon as you lose a match, you're out. So you need to win five rounds in a row.
Yeah.
And the first prize for doing that is some boosters, and you win two buys at the Grand Prix. So you start the day off with three wins.
One of those recently, didn't you?
I made the final of one in KL, and I lost to a dude that had many rares and Elspeth in his deck. And then I made the semi-final of one in Melbourne as well, but lost to, I can't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
Control. I don't even remember. You end up playing in a lot of grinders when you're there on the Friday because you just want to play some Magic. You want to test some games against people you don't know.
Yeah, you're using the deck you're going to be using the next day just to play test.
Apparently a lot of people don't, so they keep it secret.
I don't really agree with that. What's the point?
Yeah, there's 1,000 people.
There's 1,000 people trying to be versus the same person twice.
You might as well be getting used to making sideboard calls, getting familiar with your deck.
Yeah, you just
want
to get familiar with this. I can't emphasize that enough. Like,
and honestly, getting used to the competitive rules thing, which is make sure you don't draw extra cards, calling judge on your opponent when they do anything sketchy. It's just, you've got to get in the flow, you've got to get in the rhythm of being in a competitive mindset, which is probably another podcast
in itself.
Boy,
heavy.
But those grinders are definitely a good indication of like the metagame and what list to choose based on that. Because I ended up playing a specific list, decided that this is not where I wanted to be.
Cut four main big cards thing
so
based on...
Is, you know, everyone knows who Polukranos is. He's a big guy. He's a staple of this green-red list. And at the trial, I was like, this card is just not doing enough for me. I ended up just at that night, went home, completely cut that guy out of my list. I decided that I couldn't... I had a lot of shock lands, which is like the non-basic lands coming and take two damage. I was like, there's too many of these in my deck. I'm taking too much damage from my own lands.
Yeah.
I cut a bunch of those, put a bunch of basic forests in. I added a Garrick, ended up winning me like three games, so I'm pretty glad I did that. Cut a couple of Planeswalkers. Like, the Grounders definitely did a massive thing for my deck. I'm super, super glad.
So how did you make all these changes? Where do you get your cards from? Are you buying them? Are you learning, grabbing off people?
So this is another thing we can probably talk about. Team preparation.
Yeah.
So we had a group of five of us staying in... Five? Six?
Six.
Six of us staying in one apartment in Melbourne, and we have six people's cards pooled.
Yeah.
And we're all playing fairly different lists, which just means that we can pull cards from whoever. So I think I was borrowing cards from Ash because Sam was borrowing all my cards. Ash lent me two of my cards and I borrowed some from Wyatt. And then Kian was lending cards out to everyone but borrowing some random stuff. Ben doesn't even own a deck, so he was just borrowing it from me or something.
Honorable mentions go to Dave Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
For lending, like, half of his cards out to us.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't even end up going to the Grand Prix.
That's really good of him.
So, yeah, he definitely...
So you've gone over there with, like, several kilos of cards. Wow.
And just got to take them. Like, I didn't pack luggage. I just had, like, a carry case, and it was just full of, like, fat pack boxes. It was full of, like, Stanley playables.
Yeah, I had, like, 10 deck boxes of just random cards in case people needed them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can tune your deck, like...
You can also buy them. You can also buy the cards at the Grand Prix.
I'd love to see the guys at baggage control. It's like, wait... If you got four Garricks in there, is that a foil Elspeth? Wow.
Shows up on the X-ray. Yeah. It's dangerous.
I'm going to have to confiscate this one.
When this ultimates, who knows what will happen?
Flavor text. All right, we all know the rules of flavor text now. Everyone at home knows the rules of flavor text. You got your pens ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the flavor text off some cards. And you just got to tell me... what the card is.
Do we get like a sort of boundary of where the cards are from?
No, I will tell you straight up, they are all from Theros.
God, no, this is here not going to help.
Right? All right. So hit me that up. Is like, you know Theros.
Yeah.
So you've seen all of these cards. All right?
All right.
So there's no excuses this time, Ash. Strong performance.
It's going to be so bad.
Is the answer pro player Lewis Scott Vargas?
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. Well done.
Well done, Aaron. 1 point to you.
Okay. Flavortext number one.
Here we go.
Flavortext number one. One offering to appease her on her arrival, another to celebrate her departure. One offering to appease her on her arrival, another to celebrate her departure.
Oh, do you know it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No.
Hey, mate, I haven't read this before, but I like figured it out.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what it is.
It says something about the card, doesn't it? The flavor text in itself.
I already know the theme of all the cards as well.
Do you? I get it? Oh, I don't know what it is.
Oh, it could be a trick. Flavor text number two. Time is fluid as a dance and truth as fleeting.
Do you know this?
Yeah.
No, very confident.
This is my favorite card from the set.
Theros. Theros is just like, you know, Aaron's like, this
your
is just yesterday.
Card.
Yeah.
Is it like your favorite
this
card?
This is my favorite card from the set.
So it's Wingstead Rider.
How dare you? I much prefer Battlewise Hoplite.
We forgot to mention that Aaron knows everything about every card ever printed. And,
so is this actually the theme?
I've never claimed that. I don't think there's a theme. Not from this card.
Can we hear it again?
Yes, we can. Time is fluid as a dance and truth as fleeting. It's really a very tricky one to say that. There's lots of is's and as's.
Time is tricky as a fleeting dance on a wind.
Time is fluid as a dance and truth as fleeting.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't really, does
it's
it?
It's got nothing to do with the card.
It's in quotes, if that helps you at all. Like, somebody said it, but they didn't tell you who said it, so you don't get one of those.
Might have been him.
What colours? Yeah, maybe. All right.
I have no idea.
Good.
Oh, that could be the one already we've confirmed.
Yes!
Okay. Flavor text number three.
Flavor text.
Nylea's sacred lynx
like
guards
Aragard.
Those who honour the Nessian wood and hunts those who don't.
I think I know.
Nylea's sacred lynx guard. Oh, shit. Nylea's sacred lynx guards those who honor the Nessian wood and hunts those who don't. There's a big cat fucking around in the woods. He's going to chomp on you. If you're,
Well, that gave it away.
That's what's going on there, isn't it?
There's only one, right? The answer is Brumaz, King of Oresco.
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure.
In the woods.
Nylea's sacred beaver. I mean, badger. I mean, rampaging. Oh,
oh
shit.
No.
So, it's Brumaz.
Vagina.
Nylea's vagina.
Nylea's sacred lynx guards those who honour the Nessian wood and hunts those who don't. All right. I think, you know, we'll go through them. We'll go back through them. If you get any revelations, Ash, I'll write them down in a hurry.
Revelations. Is that making fun of me for missing Sphinx's revelation the other week?
That was my proudest moment of flavour text.
I don't even know what it is now. Something about law and order and...
Yeah, I don't know.
Sphinx's revelation.
Gotcha.
Okay, so one offering to appease her on her arrival, another to celebrate her departure. What do you have for that one, Aaron?
Let's break it down.
Yeah.
It's a she.
It's a she.
She
comes
in and does something, and when she leaves, she does something. So
well, it is
the answer is banish a priest. No, it's Ashen Rider.
Ashen Rider. So you got Aaron? Ash?
It's not. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you say?
I was going to say it's Banisher Priest, but no, you're right.
It's it's Ashen Rider. I didn't realize. I never looked at this card too much before. I just thought it was a big flying cat. But it's actually about the girl who's riding
the big flying cat. Can you give me the second one again?
Time is fluid as a dance and truth as fleeting.
I think there's a theme that he's searching for that doesn't exist.
Oh, is there?
There is a theme, though.
There is a theme?
Yeah, yeah.
Multicolored white cards? Oh, damn it.
Are you prepared to find out what Aaron's favourite card is? Okay, so time is fleeting.
Can we do number three first?
Do number three? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay,
I'm just going to write Vaporkin.
You got me. Time is fluid as a dance and truth is fleeting. Vaporkin.
Like Vaporkin.
I'm going to write something down.
Discokin.
Is it LSV?
So, flavor text number three. Nylea's sacred lynx guards those who honour the Nessian wood and hunts those who don't. What have you got for that one, Aaron? You want to break that one down?
There's only one cat I can think of. It sure looks like a lynx. It even has Nylea in its name. Is it Nylea's emissary?
What have you got, Ash?
I don't know. I'm just going to tell me what the answer is.
Try to block
him out.
What
did you think it was?
I thought it was something else.
Well, say what you mean. Say what you think,
because I could be wrong.
Is Aaron right?
Oh, I can't say until.
No, I'm not going to say. I don't want to embarrass myself.
Oh, come on, commit.
If I'm right, I will show it.
Aaron and I have been making fools of ourselves in this podcast for several months now.
Nylea's emissary, a cat.
It is a cat.
Is it?
Yeah, enchantment creature, cat.
I'm not saying he's.
It is. Haven't you noticed? Tell us, like, it looks like Simba.
Tell us what you got.
It looks like Simba from The Lion King.
Does it?
It does. Yeah. We'll look it up later.
Yeah, I got nothing.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Come on,
Ash.
What if it's...
No, because I know I'm wrong now, so I don't want to say what I
had. But okay, if I tell you and you go, that's what I had, you know...
Well, I wrote it down.
No, that's points. More embarrassing.
I wrote it down.
Well, so you got to say it.
No, I'm good.
Vanguard of Brimaz.
That's what I was thinking, but apparently that's not from Theros.
Yeah, it's not from Theros.
Nylea's emissary, I'm going to lock that one in.
The answer is Feral Invocation. Yeah.
Oh, you got it wrong?
There's a picture of a lynx in the background there. If you can see it there. There it is.
Oh, I am upset.
Yeah. Feral Invocation.
When you said cat, I was thinking cat as in lion.
No.
So
but Nylea's emissary is a cat.
I said flavor.
I don't think it has flavor text, though. I don't think it has flavor text. I just assumed it had flavor text I've never seen.
Next month.
I heard about flavor text. Damn it. Nylea's emissary. And guarding. I was like, Flamace Lion.
Flamace Lion. Oh, that's not a bad one, actually.
Place
oh, that's fine, I reckon.
Yeah, all right, so with the score check, we've got Aaron's on one, Ash is on zip.
I'm on one. I said Ashen Rider.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's 1-1.
Ashen Rider.
Yeah, sorry.
It just says Ash. It's just got your name scrawled on that paper 50 times.
Those playing at home.
Ash 1-1.
So, number two, flavor text number two. Time is fluid as a dance and truth is fleeting. What have you?
My favorite card from Theros is Prophet of Crufix.
Really?
Yeah. It's a sweet fucking card, man.
It's a sweet card.
Miss the blue white.
It's so sweet. So I play blue white and draft. Doesn't mean it's my favorite. Favorite card.
Never played Prophet though.
Remember the first deck I made?
It was
Prophet of Crufix, Master of Waves, Master Biomancer. Well, that deck was sick.
The bounce stuff.
Slow down, everybody. Though, is he correct? What have you got, Ash?
Vaporkin.
The answer is. Prophet of Crufix. Yeah. I played with that card the other day and it was sweet.
It's ridiculous.
It's just like, oh, it's your go. I'll just untap everything and just flash every creature I can afford out of my hand.
My least favorite thing playing against it, my opponent's just like, okay, I'll attack you. I'm like, no blocks. They're like, cool. I'll just untap them and block with them. I was like, I can get both of them.
It was fun to flash in Nessian Asp against some weedy flyers, you know, and just go, oh, I can deal with that fly now because I have a Nessian Asp that you can see going.
That's a good one.
Yeah, flashing in for blocking fun. So the final score for Flavor Text today, Aaron 2, Ash 1.
Do we have another game?
Yeah, we have another game.
Yeah, we've got another game.
You can redeem yourself. Is that more than you scored last time, though? You were on zero.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't get into Flavor Text. Definitely scored zero.
Well done.
Well done.
And there was a theme, because I almost forgot to mention that. It was the string of Ash appears in the card somewhere. These are both flash cards. They have the ability to flash things in. So there was Ash and Riders. So you were straight onto it. And then I just did a search for Ash.
So you search Ash and it's like,
flash.
It says Ash here. It's the last half of the word flash.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That's enough for me. I was happy with that.
Does Lash of the Whip not have a flavor text?
It does. It does. I was thinking about putting it in, but I thought it was just a little bit.
That would be a bit obvious.
Tournament preparation part two. All right. So this is all about looking after yourself and going over to the tournaments and all that sort of jazz. So again, this isn't about if you want to go for fun.
This can apply to any tournament, though, right?
What's that?
It can apply to F&M. To a Sunday.
Yeah, I've sort of angled it more, you know, you've traveled over east, or you know, you've traveled a fair bit to go there, and included some sort of things on that front. I'm saying this slightly from a health professional point of view, well, because that's what I do in a regular day job. So it can come over as quite heavy, and remember, you can pick or choose from all this sort of stuff. It just depends on how serious you want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right up for going for just the general weekend piss up and having a great time. But also, if you just want to play for. Try your best, you know, like do the preparation Ash was talking about. You don't want to go and blow it all by just doing some stupid shit while you're there.
We definitely avoided getting too drunk on the Friday to make sure that we could play on the Saturday. But we did have a few beverages. I think it clears the head,
yes.
The brain.
Helps it work. No, maybe not.
Unless I'll be in charge of this section then, and I'll give you what I think is the right line on it,
which
and
is
you can choose to break
no
rules.
Alcohol.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yes. Yeah. Nah.
Get so, really drunk.
So I think the first rule is never take any kind of advice on board, holus bolus, as far as how to look after yourself.
From Aaron.
Look, yeah, from Aaron. Yeah. Use critical thinking. Use some science. Use research. Look stuff up online. Don't use superstition, miracle performance enhances, all that sort of shit. It's just
bullshit.
Yeah, forget about it. It's rubbish. I think what you were talking about earlier, Ash, as well, like listening to experienced players and learning from them is good, but just beware of like anecdotal evidence. You know, so if they're just saying, I've done this before and it works for me and that's what I do, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you or it's got any validity to it at all.
Definitely.
So, do your research on it. So in any of the following of what I'm about to say as well, look it up, just, you know, test it, you know, see if it works. I've generally found that people say, do this. It's common sense, full of shit, because that's the evidence. It's like, what evidence have you got that this works? Well, it's common sense. That's not evidence. That's horse shit.
Yeah.
So hopefully I've broken this down into some like logical steps so it can make sense to you. Like I said before, if you're going for a tournament for fun, that's good. You know, you go to party, maybe team up with those guys, the other guys that are going to party as well, and have them as your roommates. For the other guys that are taking it seriously, you know, maybe team up there. Like Aaron was saying, if he's running around fetching food for everyone after day one, you might have been on the drinking party the night before. Yeah. So be prepared. That might be a job you might get. A lot of this comes down to as well. I was thinking about dependencies, like people can have like caffeine or having a smoke, or if even alcohol to a certain degree. You know, be mindful if you've got certain things that are going to have like visceral pangs, as I like to term them. They're going to like annoy you if you're sitting there thinking about having a cigarette or getting a cup of coffee because you got a raging headache. That's probably something you might want to think about ahead of time about how you might want to manage.
At least a week before. Maybe wean off the coffee before. Going to waking up late for a Grand Prix and being like, don't have time to get a coffee, and then you just have a headache for rounds 5 through 9.
Yeah, you're not going to perform anywhere near your best because you're thinking, this headache's really pissing me off.
Yeah.
And eventually you're going to make that call. If I lose this game, I get to go get some Panadol from the local chemist.
Yeah, that's the
and
worst.
And it's all over. And you just wasted the whole, you know, if you've spent two months preparing and then you lose because you want to get some Panadol, then you're going to feel shitty.
I've spoken to some people that are just like, man, I don't even care if I lose. I just want to go get food. Bring some food. Maybe avoid that situation from happening.
Yeah. So mental health terms, if you get to know yourself a little bit regarding what stresses you and what doesn't stress you out, I'm sure there's limiting factors on what you can do regarding your immediate environment.
Now people get nervous.
Yeah, people, you'll get nervous. It's natural to get nervous. That's your body getting ready to perform, right? You know, you're getting amped up, you're ready to perform, but 9 hours into it, it's going to be pretty hard to maintain that kind of level. But there's loads of factors that you'll notice about the way you live your life that reduce stress, and try to like monitor those and see which ones you can apply to a tournament setting. I mean, the usual ones that we use at my work in mental health, stuff like, you know, if someone's really stressed out and they come and see us, we'll say, right, when you go home, just try to appeal something to each sense which will make you relax. So a good one is you go have a warm bath, so then you've got some sort of tactile response. You'll have nice lighting, it's visually nice. You'll burn something that's a candle that smells good.
Yep.
Listen to some music and tell everyone to leave you alone so you don't get disturbed. And maybe have a glass of wine or something that relaxes.
Yeah.
Pretty much none of those you can do at the table while you play Magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all of those things will help you relax. So if you say, I can do that for half an hour, you're going to chill out. And there'll be things that you can do, I'll sort of touch on a bit later on in the whilst you're gaming, that can help you relax.
One of the problems with Grand Prix is that they're quite hostile environments. If you're not going with a good group of people, it could be extremely hostile. Being under fluorescent lights all day definitely doesn't make me feel very good. Being around like not being stupid or anything. I know people have gotten in trouble for this in the last week, like making fun of people with bad hygiene and stuff at Grand Prix, but like it is true. You are going to be experiencing not great conditions with some of the people that you play against and that sort of thing. So it's about being able to
focus through all of that stuff?
Oh, it's really, you can do stuff. You know, I mean, if you can, you can anticipate that you might be playing against someone who might reek, you know, chew some gum or something, try to, you know, and then focus on the on the mint smell or something like that. And there's lots of other stuff going on. But I mean,
there's so many things
you
can go
super deep on the mindful stuff. So, yeah, like probably what we, you guys were talking about a bit earlier is if you can be organized, so if you know where to find your matches, how to post the result, where the toilets are, where you can get food, that kind of stuff, just takes a little snippet of anxiety out of having to find that stuff in a hurry when you're running around mid-tournament. Yeah, I was thinking, like, I haven't been to a tournament, but some of the ideas I came up with would be, like, you know, if it's 900 people running around, maybe make a point to meet up with your friends at a certain place.
Yeah, so we were talking about that the day before,
Yeah, because otherwise, if you spend all of your break time, or, you know, if you've got a break in the day just looking for a friend of yours, then that's going to hurt.
It's definitely happened to me at GPs before. You just kind of wander a bit, looking at groups.
And then it's time to go back. Oh, shit.
Like,
oh,
I could have next round's up, and you're like, I didn't tell anyone about my pack. I got beaten by pack rat on turn three.
But that's my next point, is like, agree to talk each other up. If you're in it to try and win, like, you know, if you've, you'll have... You might come out of a match that didn't go so well, or you're a bit shook up by it, you know, or you're a bit exhausted. If you've got like a team, you can recharge just by talking about your experience positively and feeling better about going to the next game. Yeah. If you just have to deal with it with yourself, you're probably going to walk into the next match feeling pretty shitty anyhow.
Something you can also do, something you should also not do, is as soon as someone finishes a match where they lost, or even if they won, immediately shouting in their face what they did wrong. Give them a few freaking minutes to like... chill out and make sure that they know.
It does happen a lot.
Because people just go, why didn't you attack with that thing? And you're like, shut up. Shut up. I literally only just finished getting my ass handed to me by some bullshit. Please just wait a second before going on.
Gray merchant.
Yeah, like,
leave me alone.
Yeah. You know, like, they're like, well, you should have attacked with the knife aspect. Like, shut up. Like, wait a few minutes before ramming your advice down someone's throat. Because they were in the game and you were not. Just give them a minute.
And they probably know it already anyway, if they're at that level of experience.
And you're shoving it in their face.
Yeah,
it's,
and they're going to be sitting
super unpleasant. When
they're sitting in the next game just thinking, man, I'm the guy that, you know, should have done X, Y, and Z in the last match, and I'm not as smart as a guy who told me that. And
you just get that guy's going like 1-4. Yeah. Like, well, you try to give me advice because you finished your round early because you got smashed harder than I did.
Yeah. But it's so easy to start those internal monologues with yourself, you know, which can just really make you focus on that sort of stuff rather than what is the next best play.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm terrible. I'm not preaching from a position of power here. David Putz during the week was asking me, what do you think of, you know, because he's looking at how I play and the mistakes I make. He's, what are you thinking of when you make that play? And I realized what I was thinking. Every time I'm playing Magic, I'm thinking, don't make the wrong play. I'm not thinking, what card? How am I going to get advantage? Am I tempo? Am I aggro?
Well, don't
thinking,
do the wrong thing.
I'm thinking, don't do the wrong thing. Then as soon as I've made my play, I immediately tell myself that the other play which I didn't do was the one that I should have done. It's like the worst possible mentality for it at all.
Self-sabotaging.
And I really haven't got to that stage of I'm going to take it that seriously that I'm going to focus on that, but you can really do it. I probably left the strategies for doing that sort of thing until right at the end. bad timing. But getting back to that stressful environment or managing your environment, I brainstormed a few things that you guys might be able to correct me on whether you can actually do them or not, but... While you're playtesting before the tournament, I thought, you know, if you're using the same playmat or same sleeves and things like that, you're like, you can use all that sort of stuff in the tournament.
Yeah.
So that immediately can set up your environment. So if there's this chaos around, you're in a strange environment, it looks weird. Mm-hmm. If you're looking down at the table, you're seeing that playmat, which you've won loads of games on. You've seen the same sleeves, which you've won loads with, or same design. It's a familiar environment all of a sudden. And that increases your confidence. Or you can also... When you're preparing, if your mental imagery is right, you know, you'd be seeing yourself winning games.
Yeah.
You can see yourself winning games on that playmat with those sleeves. It's very difficult to imagine what the hall is going to look like that you're going to be sitting in and imagine yourself winning in that. So it's going to be strange. But those sort of key factors in the environment can make that happen work for you.
The Grand Prix I've done well at, where I felt I'm really in the mental zone, where I've been very confident with my deck. And as soon as every round starts, you have your ritual that you do.
Yeah.
Because it just gets you in the spot where you're not messing around, you're not kind of stuffing around or whatever, trying to find your seat. You go and find your seat, calmly go sit down, put out your playmat, get your dice, get your thing, write down what round it is, start shuffling if your opponent's not there. Make sure that you have everything where you need it as soon as you need it, and you can just start playing Magic as soon as they go your round starting. And I've felt the best, and like the times I've, it's actually like I've been in a mental bubble where all you can see is the game.
You're good at dropping into that though, because I've been worried that conversations have been happening around you, and Dave has said to me, "Don't worry, he's in the zone. He won't hear any of this."
I experience that as well. I'm quite good at just getting into the zone. Especially when people are like talking to you and you just like don't even realize it. You're like that focused.
Yeah, that's great.
And you don't even like. That's what I felt like at the Grand Prix. Yeah, that you're that.
That's one of the things that just. That really makes Magic a thing for me, because you feel the play, like
it's head racing and like you just like it's like it's happening in front of you. Yeah. But it's not really.
It's like you can see everything, and you always choose the correct path, and it's awesome. And I remember this one game I finished at a Grand Prix trial I was doing really well in or something. I remember finishing the game. And my opponent went, "Yeah, you got me," and he scooped his cards up. And as he scooped his cards up, it was like a bubble kind of parted before me. And I was like, "Oh, cool, all right, yeah." And then I could like be a person again, because it was just like everything that you're doing, every draw step is just it's like it's mechanical. Everything is it's that's a really awesome feeling.
Which is my very next point, was just like the routine. So I mean, you've covered that. If routine really helps you, if you're doing things that you're familiar with and you're going through the process, then it'll be a lot easier for you to actually enact the plays that you want to do.
Like, don't, like, have a pen and paper. Don't be borrowing pens and paper from people around
you. Get all flustered and stuff.
Don't ask to borrow dice from the people sitting next to you. Have a packet of dice.
Have everything prepared.
Yeah, it's so easy to make
Have water, like, to do when you're not doing anything.
So don't easy to have water, all that sort of stuff.
I always had, like, access to fluid at all times.
Yeah. So, so like I said before, be familiar with what helps you relax and refresh. So even if you've got seconds between your match, it might be that you just listen to some music on your way to the next match. Or if you, I mean, you know, like it can do some stretching, stuff like that. You know, it just gets the blood pumping a little bit. You can get that sort of stuff. It can happen really quickly. But it's what works for you.
Yeah.
Stretching is probably not going to do anything for me. I don't really get off on
that. Just like tournaments in the store, people just going outside and getting a breath of fresh air between rounds. Just talk about what happened, talk about things, and just like going outside and just taking a beat from the hubbub that's going on, and just feeling.
I reckon I could listen to 30 seconds of Stockholm Syndrome by Muse on the way to the next match, and I'd be totally pumped and ready for that.
Oh, I was going
to
say that calms you down.
Yeah, I know. It gets me psyched, man. All right, so physical conditioning. Number one, I'd say the easiest one is wear comfy clothes. Don't go wear and impress anyone. You don't have to wear super clothes that are going to really feel constrained.
Sorry, there are a lot of ladies at the Grand Prix to impress with your fine clothes, but don't bring them.
I made sure I was wearing a singlet at all times.
Yeah,
and flex.
Yeah, like you were wearing a singlet and just like a jumper.
I was wearing just jeans, singlet, and like this comfy jumper.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, you got to be comfy. I mean,
sure I was wearing this actually, and then I wore my other version of this the next day.
But you probably, you know, like if you go in with a tank top and their place is super air conditioned and it's freezing in there, you know, if you got a jumper with you, you're king of the world then, because you're like rugged up and you're feeling great, you know, you're fine. Let your opponent worry about that. So I thought it's really easy to also use a bit of foresight, just to think if you're traveling somewhere, it's, you know, quite common you can get a cold or a flu or anything like that just really quick, so you can always take throat lozenges, you know, just little flu medication. Yeah, you take some flu medication or something like that.
Really? Oh, really?
Sure. You know, it's pretty common to get those sort of symptoms. And again, it's just one of those things that can detract you, can reduce your performance, can reduce your energy levels, and it's easy to try to mitigate a little bit. So yeah, on food and drink consumption. Now, I'm not a dietitian. I don't know this inside and out, but I've talked to many over the years. I find it fascinating. To do with, if you... Like caffeine, I think, is a big one. Like if I'm drafting, I'll try to have a Red Bull right before I start. But that's because it's a sprint. Like a draft is a sprint. This sort of all day for 2 days thing isn't going to work. I think
caffeine hinders you more.
It's going to hinder you a bit, even if you've got like a.
Because you'll crash after round four.
That's why you have to keep it going. Like,
I've very much experienced that. And it's have a coffee in the morning and just be done with it. But don't start pounding Red Bulls.
But even then, if you have a Coke or a coffee or something like that, and then you do the right thing of like having just water with you so you don't dry out, anything with caffeine in it, it's a diuretic, and that's just going to make you want to go to the toilet more. So if you're loading up on loads of juice and you've got diuretics in your system, you're going to want to take a piss really quick as well. So it I couldn't think of a scenario where it worked. Initially, I thought you could do like what the, you know, the English Premier League footballers do. I know they, some of them starve themselves of caffeine for a week, and then they have something right before the match, so they're super psyched. Mm-hmm. And if that, because I originally heard of that, if the match got cancelled and they booked it for the next day, they were all like, no, we can't do that, because yeah. the caffeine effect wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's just an anecdotal Taylor game, but mm-hmm. I can sort of see that working. So I think, you know, if you're like me,
Grand Prix are a long distance thing.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend loading up on anything unless you think that you're going to be panning them all day, and that's terrible for your
yeah,
brain.
Yeah, I don't think it's you wouldn't make it.
And your brain dries out.
Don't take any energy drinks. It's not a good idea.
No.
Have your morning coffee to get yourself going in the morning.
Mm-hmm. But be aware that that might make you go to the toilet quicker.
Yeah, and I found myself having to use the bathroom fairly often. But you can obviously usually time it to go between rounds.
Yeah.
Usually that's fine.
And that's another kind of zone out thing as well. If you need to pee every couple,
really?
it doesn't matter too much. The toilet's always accessible.
Yeah.
It's never a really far walk. And you want to be sipping water every round.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to be doing it, definitely.
I just think after all the thought I gave to it, I think if I was to go, I would, as a coffee a day person, I'm definitely, I have a coffee a day, otherwise I feel a bit wrong. I reckon I'd wean myself right off a coffee or any sort of caffeine before an event and try to go in dry. Mm. I've had, experienced my caffeine headache a couple of days before.
It takes me about a week to come down off coffee completely.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure I want to do that when I'm going away and do my jet lag.
Yeah, so the toilet trips are either going to lose you time within the match, or are they going to distract you, or it's going to be something urgent you want to do in between matches, and it's just another thing that can stress you out. So I thought, best to minimize it.
Mm-hmm.
For meals-wise, this is, I've got a really rudimentary understanding of all this sort of stuff. But
potato.
Yeah, actually, there's this big carb fallacy out there that carbs are bad for you, and they're not bad for you at all. Carbs are great for you. It's just that if you eat bulk carbs, then you'll put on weight. You bulk anything, you'll put on weight.
What did Ricky Gervais say in his thing? He's like, overweight people aren't, there's nothing wrong with carbs. You're just eating more carbs than you're burning.
Yeah.
That's simply what it is. That's all overweight is.
And that's all about calories. That's like putting weight on, taking it off. It's a really simple thing. It's if you can burn more calories than what you're taking on, you'll lose them. But you'll lose weight. But what we're talking about here is tournament preparation. And it's not a matter of it's a matter of having enough energy on board so that the machine that you're driving, your body has enough energy to do the day.
Mm-hmm.
You're not eating so much that if you eat a lot, your body then wants to process that.
Mm-hmm.
And
you slow down.
Well, your liver is insulin's going to go up, which produces a tryptophan, which I always thought of as turkeys. Christmas turkeys had a lot of tryptophan, and I heard years ago, but that's where I remember it from.
Oh, that's why you feel sleepy after you eat turkey.
Yeah, and then that tryptophan sort of apparently helps promotes a serotonin response, mm-hmm. and everyone knows about serotonin, the mood drug,
mm-hmm.
but that also helps you, it might react to something, so you can, that's why you can comfort eat, because you get a serotonin response.
Yeah.
Also makes you sleepy. Mm-hmm. So if you boost up on loads of food, you're going to just feel shattered because you're going to be knackered while you're trying to process that. Your liver is very good at titrating your blood sugar levels, so you don't really have to worry about that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think eating big early in the morning isn't great. But having good carbs that have got long chain sugars, which is what carbs are, that slowly break down over the day, will keep you not mm-hmm. feeling hungry.
Yeah.
If you have sugars, you'll feel hungry quicker.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a super spike of energy from your body's really good at just making sure that you have the right amount of energy at all times.
I remember reading an article on Star City or Channel Fireball or one of them saying you shouldn't actually eat a medium-sized breakfast, but then don't eat lunch, because your brain is the sharpest when you're a little bit hungry.
Right,
actually snack a little bit during the day. If it's a Grand Prix, be a little bit hungry during the whole day. Don't go have a massive lunch, because you'll just siesta pretty much,
I'm ready to have a snooze.
3 or 4, and all of us felt that. We all had a big sandwich or something for lunch on the Friday. It might have even been the Saturday of the Grand Prix, and I was just fucking tired. And Sam was
5'2 or something, and he's just like, man, I could just sleep right now.
Yeah.
Because I was in great shape for those times.
It's because of me just like...
Yeah, that's all pictures
dead of just like sleeping on tables. Yeah.
I'd definitely recommend just like regular snacking. Even you can do it while you're
the
playing.
Best thing to do.
And just, and maybe on protein stuff as well, because then, I mean, that's energy expensive to process protein, but at least you're not going to feel hungry, and it's just going to... and like it's easy maybe to get fruit and nut, but fruit is fructose, which is simple sugars, which is just getting into that sugar cycle as well. So I think, you know, with my rudimentary dietitian experience, I think just like nuts or something like that is going to get you like right through the day. And like you say, you don't necessarily have to have big meals after that. Just make sure you're taking on energy as you go. Obviously, don't booze it up during the day. I mean, I think if you're going to booze it up during the day, you're sort of like putting your...
Yeah, you know what you're
scooping.
Doing.
You're scooping. You know what you're doing. You're scooping on the day. Simple sugars I've talked about. Nuts are such a trap, because I thought, you get fruit and nut, that's the fruit would be bad for you. You get salted nuts, that's going to make you thirsty, which is going to make you go to the toilet more. It's like it's a trap. Yeah. So the horrible, plain, like unsalted nuts.
Those
are your friends.
Potato.
Yeah, I said that. Yeah, and like Ash was saying, always have water with you at the table.
Always,
you know,
have water.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with water. Yeah. And nowhere to get restocks, whether it's the guy who went out and got drunk last night, this is wandering around the hall, lost, he can go get it for you, or if it's just up to you.
I wasn't that drunk.
Who said I was talking about you?
Just lost a Minotaur, so I was very sad.
Good pump. All right, here's a good mental health one as well. Sleep hygiene. Yeah, that's what we call it, sleep hygiene. Get a decent night's sleep the night before. I think
I have heard that one before.
I screwed that one up big time.
So this can be if you're coming from Perth to Melbourne, you know, it's like working out when your flights are going to be. You know, if you're arriving at 11, 12 the night before the tournament starts at 9, your tournament's over already.
You can tell the people who have like flown in the night before, because they rock up to the dorm and they're just like, oh, what am I doing? So spaced out, especially like long distance tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're going like overseas or something.
Especially if you're flying east, because you're losing time. If you're playing a 9 o'clock tournament, it's already, say, midday if it's 3 hours difference. You know, it's already midday your time. By the time you get to the end of the day, you could be past midnight and well into the morning, and you're not aware of it. And you might have, you know, slept badly the night before. You're not operating on that. And there's loads of studies which say a tired person is in like worse condition for focus than a drunk person. You know, obviously to varying degrees. You can get totally hammered and be slightly
or be
snoozy,
a little bit tired.
Yeah. So you know, it's not a direct thing, but I mean.
That's why, like, if you know you're flying somewhere, try to get there a couple of days earlier.
Yeah, ideally, that's
give yourself
a climatize. Yeah,
because even Melbourne, which is just 3 hours difference, like just rocking up on the we cut there on the Tuesday, and even that like we're just done for the day.
Yeah, I got there on the Thursday night, and we went out, and then I woke up and I was like, it's 4 a.m. at home.
Because you can solve such easy things by being there. Like if you can afford to do it, getting there a few days early, just like where is it? Where do I have to register?
Yeah.
Whatever you have to do, any of the admin, where am I going to get food from? You can maybe solve or have a few backups for like if there's no food available at the venue.
We had this great thing with us called Wyatt.
Yes.
Who's just the organized guy in the group, and he just knew all the shit.
He's definitely the dad of the group.
Yeah.
But if you're not an organized person...
Good dad, not bad.
Not the bad kind of dad.
If you're not an organized person, but you want to take it seriously, and you have an organized person, if you have a Wyatt with you, lean on them a little bit and see if they're willing to help you.
We'd be lost without him.
Yeah. We would have literally been lost, because we wouldn't have been able to walk home from the
pub. Or we wouldn't have had anywhere to stay.
Yeah. We wouldn't have staying in some shitty backpackers somewhere. Instead, we've got this apartment like looking
sweet
over Melbourne.
Beautiful view.
Yeah.
That'll make you feel good.
Thanks, Wyatt.
Thanks, Wyatt.
So what Wyatt would do is, he'd book you in a hotel. It might have a gym in it.
It did. We didn't use it.
Yeah,
and
you
it
should
had
definitely...
had pool as well.
The day before the tournament, get in there, do use the gym. If you don't have a gym, go for a walk. Try to physically tire yourself out a bit. Don't start a new gym program on the day, because then you'll feel sore the next day. That'd be stupid. Yeah. What you want to do is something that you can manage. If you're totally unfit, maybe you want to do a little bit of physical activity before you go in preparation, so that you can actually do a bit of exercise. the day before the tournament, so you can try to trigger a good sleep the night before. Mm. So if you go and do something physical, come home, have a nice meal, you're going to get to bed on time and you're going to feel tired.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier to do if you're, you know, physically worn out a little bit. The obvious one again, don't drink caffeine late in the day of that night. If you're going caffeine, that would be really dumb because you're not going to get any sleep, especially if you've done the no caffeine approach for a few weeks before.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that's not going to
happen more than once. I'm like, I want a warm drink. I have a coffee.
Oh, God.
It's 6 in the morning.
Later. What am I doing?
And how do you feel when it's 2:30 in the morning and you're trying to get to sleep? You know you want to get some sleep and
your
you can't.
Your body's wrecked. Your mind's just like...
Yeah, you hate, you basically hate yourself. Mm. Right. And so, yeah, something that can help with that, again, is familiarity. Your hotel room's going to be a strange environment. You don't want to spend the night just looking at that weird light that's on the wall somehow. And you go, where
slightly.
Does that come from? You know, why is that there? What's that noise in the background? Is that the air conditioner? I find, listening to, like, the iPod or something like that, you know, if you got your iPod dock, take that with you. They're pretty small. You can listen to some music that you're familiar with going to sleep to. That can get you help you get off to bed. It's a familiarity Stop thing again. Syndrome. That's it. Good for all occasions. Don't do any of these things for the first time on pre-tournament night. It's that routine thing. You know, if you go, right, I've got my checklist of all these awesome things I should do and do while I'm there, I'm going to do them for the first time when I'm in the tournament, then it's a strange city and you're going to be stressing out
listening
about trying
to music,
do...
being hungry but not too hungry, snacking only on not salted nuts and you're just like throwing up.
rejecting everything.
I've been in Melbourne for 3 weeks now, acclimatizing to the time. I'm sick of it.
These things need to be your routine. If you're more focused about doing the routine rather than playing magic, then
if you can do it for the next Grand Prix trial that we hold in store. I don't know if pre-releases work, because pre-releases are just disgusting. Like, everyone feels disgusting all pre-release weekend.
But you know what? You could probably do a lot of trial stuff on yourself, just like getting through it, because it's a long haul of pre-release, you know?
And I find it hard to sleep days before big tournaments.
Yeah,
when they're
excited.
At home, regardless of when they're in.
Yeah, I can't sleep at all.
God, man, you going to the Pro Tour.
I don't know how. I'm going to struggle. I'm going to struggle real bad.
Yeah. I think just like that routine thing, normalizing everything, seeing yourself doing well at it can really get you a long way. So once you're there,
that's the only way I got through it all. Like, was just the whole mentalizing that I could actually get there.
Yeah,
like the whole physical preparation wasn't so great, but the mental was what got me. Over the line.
If every second or third thought is, "Wow, I'm in the top four. Wow, this is awesome."
It's like, I hope I don't lose. I hope I don't lose.
And then you lose.
Yeah. It's kind of a shame.
Like, you got to be like, "I'm gonna win."
It's kind of a shame you don't get to absorb the moment necessarily because you're so focused on that. But I think that's really part of being successful.
You've got to be detached.
Yeah. Just to finish off the focus side of things, you've done all of the above. Congratulate yourself on it. You're operating at 100%. I reckon if you get there, you'd be feeling pretty funky.
Yeah. I think
you'd
have
good.
Such a big edge over everybody else if you can like, get to these points that you've just talked about.
So some of the things, like I thought, like when I was drafting the other day, something I'm a terrible, terrible breather. Your brain is a very oxygen-hungry organ, and it needs you to breathe quite well. I realized while I was drafting the other day, something that I do is, like, the more anxious I am or the more I'm thinking, the less I breathe. Mm-hmm. And a big tip, because you're looking at your hands, is your hands will start shaking. So if you're playing and you see your hands start shaking, you just got to take some deep breaths. It'll probably be like having that drink of caffeine. You'll think, like, whoa, that's what a rush.
Your brain will
be like,
now.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah.
And then a blue mouse will appear in your hand and you'll, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And you'll win.
That's when you've inhaled too deeply and the card's been sucked straight out of your deck. Okay,
in my mouth.
Mindfulness, really quickly. This is something that you can go super deep on, and there's a whole.
We can probably have another podcast about mental game because we talked about physical game.
Yeah, the mental game I'll just touch on briefly. I think mindfulness. If you can go look up anything on that and read up on it, they use it in something called DBT, which stands for dialectical behavioral therapy, and acceptance and commitment therapy use mindfulness a lot, and that's it's okay to have negative thoughts. Don't feel bad if you think, I'm going to lose this match. That's just the thought that can happen. And mindfulness is sort of like being aware of all those things happening, but not necessarily focusing on them. If you focus on them, then what you might do is if you start thinking negative when a bad situation comes, you'll go, oh, this match is what I've been thinking. Mm. I'll walk straight into this bad situation and make it happen and sort of facilitate a bad scenario.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
So it's hard to do on a podcast quickly, but I went to some acceptance and commitment therapy training, and what they said is to try to visualize your life as a stage and the spotlight's on yourself, and there's multiple things going on around you. And if you've got an issue which you're concerned about at the time, say it's, I'm crap, I'm the worst magic player in the world, that sort of mental talk, and you focus on it, it's like picking up a bit of paper and putting it right in front of your face. So if you imagine that at home, you put it right in front of your face, then all of a sudden you can't see anything else that's happening on that stage because that's your entire focus. Mm-hmm. And on the stage is, this is how you beat this guy. This is what card you play. These are the combos I'm looking for. All of a sudden you can't see that because you're focused on this negative thought. Mm-hmm. If you try to push it away and ignore it, all you're doing is pushing the paper to like at arm's length. And if you're constantly doing that, it's the same sort of thing as physically trying to push that paper away. It's very exhausting and tiring, and you're still focused on it and you're not focused on anything else. Yeah. It's all analogy stuff, but it helps you sort of picture what you need to do. So the idea is just to name things. So if you get like a negative thought, you think, and I'm not actually a top four player. I shouldn't be in the final eight. You know, this isn't for me. I think I'm going to lose now. You just go, right, that's just that. You can just name it. That's the you know, poor confidence voice, or whatever, and just push it to one side and mentally. Or people say, see a stream before you, and so see it floating away on the stream.
And then I wee myself.
Yeah. But and Casillo or whatever. But you'll have a steady stream of thoughts, and just being able to name them and let them just go is quite fine, because one of those thoughts is, what's my next play? Mm-hmm. And in this scenario, you kind of probably want to focus on that sort of stuff and be aware of that. But all those other thoughts will keep happening. And, you know, sometimes it's just, that guy's been a dickhead over there. That's just something that happened. I had that thought, let it drift away. Mm-hmm. And then you're back into the zone and you're looking back at your cards and trying to make the right play. Another good quick analogy on this as well is you've always got control of your body. So no matter what your thoughts are, they don't always have to get the better of you, right? I had saw this great example where the guy who was doing the lecture on this sort of stuff was called someone up, and he said, right, think about the angriest time that the time that you were the most angry, and think, get right inside that, how you're feeling, all that sort of stuff. Now, I forgot what he said. He said, right, yell at me now, like, I'm angry, you know, and the guy went, you know, and just yelled it. And it was very, you know, sort of mood appropriate and all that sort of stuff. And he said, right, now do exactly the same thing, but whisper it, I'm angry. And so he did. He goes, well, get right inside it. You're there at the moment, you can see the people that are making you angry, and then whisper it. And he went, I'm angry. See how you were in control of both scenarios, and you were in control of your arms and your legs at the same time. Mm. And these are just thoughts, right? So there's nothing that makes you want to flip the table when you're having those you know, negative thoughts or anything like that. You can just go, right, I'm the worst player in the universe, but I'm just going to let that drift off, and I'm still in control of myself, and I'm going to now play the best I possibly can.
Mm.
So that stuff goes deep, but if you can, you'll probably be able to find loads of resources on that. Like I said, look it up. It's usually called mindfulness. I think it can get lost in a whole bunch of Buddhism stuff, but I think they actually drew on some stuff from that for these therapies. Because it's just about...
The meditation thing is not not real.
It's not very real. It's not a religion-based thing at all. It's just this is how you can just maintain focus. It's MTG Card Quiz. Card quiz, children.
Card quiz.
Card quiz.
Brought Jack to you by Aaron with Carter.
And Mr. David.
Wow, we've ramped that right up now, haven't we? Anybody that's fallen asleep during all my really heavy...
Can you please just soundbite that particular one and always use it?
Do you mean you're not going to bring it every time? That was live, everybody.
That was live.
Live.
Whoa. Live and real.
And raw. Live from Seven Land Hand.
Seven Land Hand Unplugged.
The Big G. All right.
Strip back.
Oh, so what we're doing?
The big G.
What we're doing, kids? We're playing MTG Card Quiz, because that was obvious, because we just played the tune, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
The well-known,
the classic 11
Grammy Award-winning tune.
the classic
by the Big G.
Yeah, by the Big G. All right, pens at hand. Everyone at home, you ready? Maybe at home
my
today.
My penis is in my hand.
Maybe at home you could beat these two clowns in here. It might not be too hard. Ash, the score at the moment is currently 2-1 in favour of Aaron.
Oh, this is cumulative.
Well, it is when Ash is in.
Is it like an aggregate?
Ash has got a massive handbrake of, like...
Oh, that's not gross. I don't want to hear
handbrake
about that.
Of massive handbrake of incapability. Let him accrue.
Handicap.
Handicap.
It could also mean he gets thrashed by a bigger number, but let's ignore that fact.
Right.
Okay. So, question one. Well, these are just cards about... I've forgotten how to introduce this, but these are just general MTG card quiz questions. And the theme. Segment for a theme.
Oh, we get to know the theme?
I'm trying to make it as easy as possible for Ash. It could mean that you get 100% and Ash gets 0% still.
that would not be okay. Below 10, average.
Are you ready? 15%
less than zero.
Would be good.
The theme today is Theros tokens.
Oh,
what?
I know this like the back of my hand.
I don't.
Oh, she's out already.
I'm out.
All right. Done.
You ready? Question one.
Four.
Question one, MTG card quiz. In Theros, how many blue cards can create tokens? What are the names of these cards? So in Theros, how many blue cards create tokens? And what are their names? Aaron, quick on the pen. He's writing stuff down. Ash, looking at the ceiling, confused, wondering why the movement detector's going on the security thing. Aaron, writing, now distracted by me talking about the security guard. Is this a security guard?
I think there's only two.
Ash, giving away maybe two, maybe...
Could be wrong.
Maybe one, maybe four. It's a number. It's not 69, I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's what I wrote down.
Okay.
I can only think of one.
Well, right, next one. Yeah, I'm up. Yes.
No. Punchy. Right. The punchy card quiz is good. All right.
Where are we going, Aaron?
Question number two.
Don't think about it.
Theros card quiz. Oh, he might be lying about there being two. There might only be one.
Maybe there's only one.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's question, how he gets me.
Question number two. In Theros, how many artifact cards can create tokens? What are the names of these cards? These are pretty vanilla questions this week. You know, those haven't gone too tricky.
How many artifact cards can create tokens?
In Theros, how many artifact cards can create tokens?
What are the names
of these cards?
Oh, I don't know.
Ash with a potential lead here. It could be two more at this stage.
I'm terrible at this.
Well, hang on a minute. Was that Aaron saying he's terrible at this? When he knows what every single card from every release ever printed says and
I
does.
I never said I knew tokens.
He did, didn't he, Ash?
Yeah, he actually said, I know these like the back of my hand.
The entire magic canon.
We'll see when I schooled you. Canon.
Did you get anything for that?
Yeah.
Confidently.
Yeah, of course I did.
This is the Aaron Graham mindfuck that's been played upon Ash. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then at the end, it's like 100%.
I got them all right. Yeah. Every single one.
Okay, now you're definitely going to have to write this one down. This is where I've gone deep. I've gone with two vanilla questions. Now it gets tricky.
I thought this
would be the tiebreaker.
LSV.
Are you ready? On the battlefield. Yes, it's one of those questions. On the battlefield, I have a Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
Mm-hmm.
I have Erebos's emissary bestowed upon a disciple of Fenix.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have a returned phalanx.
Yeah.
And a Farika's mender.
Yeah.
I cast an abhorrent overlord. How many harpies do I get? Boom. Aaron says,
so it's Grey Merchant. Erebos's emissary.
No, you can only say it once. Otherwise, you just work it out.
I think
really
Aaron knew what the question was going to be.
No, I think I knew what it was, but because I thought phalanx was something.
Ready? I'll give it to him. I can tell you.
He's got a Grey Merchant out.
No, I don't believe it.
Erebos's emissary bestowed onto a disciple of Phoenix.
Yeah.
A return phalanx. Farika's mender, and he plays a Boron overlord. How many harpies does he get?
that's bang on. You're screwed, Ash. He's remembered the question. Never mind the answers. The answers secondary.
So there's a return phalanx and a Farika's mender in there.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Mm. All right.
Probably got this wrong.
Yes.
All right.
How many harpies does he get? Is that what the question was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we go back to the answers. I suppose there's a theme tune for the answers.
You got me, Aaron. Did you get me?
MTG card quiz answers. Yeah. That was brilliant. Yeah. All right. Everyone's pumped up for the answers now.
Yeah.
Okay. What have we got? Going to Aaron first. In Theros, how many blue cards can create tokens? What are the names of these cards? What have you got?
Ash has confused me by making me think that there's more than one.
The excuses.
Yeah.
He's no idea.
The only one I can think of is Curse of the Swine.
Curse of the Swine, make me look
bored. Oh, I didn't even think of... No, I did.
X, blue, blue. Yeah. Exile target, X creatures. Its controller puts a 2/2 boar into play for each creature.
A very cute boars dressed up
super
as soldiers.
I can't remember another one. I don't know if Ash
there's,
remembers.
There's actually one other card.
Ah, and what have you got, Ash?
It's a blue instant.
It's a blue instant.
Oh, fuck!
it's a counterspell of some kind. But I believe it's a 2/2 bird token on the battlefield.
Dicks.
It is actually called
Dicks and Willies.
Swan Song. Yeah.
Huzzah!
No. So you win that one. Woo! So I think if it's not a draw, then that'd be a point. I think the score
Doesn't he get 2 points and I get 1 point?
Nah, that's too hard.
Yeah, I believe that.
You want to do that?
Yeah, I'll have 2 points.
It's the same.
So you want 2 points?
It's the same as him getting one and then me getting zero.
He
would hit the lead if we did that. Because he would get 2 points and you would get one.
So it would be 3-3.
Three all. Oh, okay. Yeah, do you want to play it that way? Because there's lots of...
Yeah. I like a tight race.
Okay. It's 3-3. But however, there was 3 cards.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Can the tiebreaker be who remembers... No!
Oh, Master Point.
We're so stupid.
That's the easiest one. Oh, so noob.
Everyone else actually... is like, well, obviously Master of Waves. I can't remember that other stupid one.
Curse of the Swine.
Swan song.
Oh, dick. Oh, so awkward.
We're so bad at
this
game.
I held up the pictures of the cards.
Oh, wow. That's so embarrassing.
The failure theme. But hey, good news, Aaron. Ash, you
the
win.
Only standard playable one. We did not get that one.
Because this one's in mono blue side bots. Come on, buddy.
All right,
so
let's go.
Song Super Legacy play.
That was an exciting round.
It doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Question 2. In Theros, how many artifact cards can create tokens? What are the names of these cards?
Probably get this one wrong.
Aaron, over to you.
I know one. It's a crow and horse.
A crow and horse?
Mr. Horse.
What have you got, Ash?
I also got the horse C.
Yeah, so the answer is one. Is he written it down?
Yeah, he is.
So the answer is one, a crow and horse. The answer is
two,
and holds up a picture of...
Oh, you trickster!
Yeah, I thought I'd get with
you
that
trickster.
One. Hammer of Perforos.
Hammer of Perforos, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, that
makes
tokens too, makes golems.
It can make golem enchant
like
artifact creature tokens.
So stupid.
Why are we doing so badly?
We got the last one wrong.
Your scoring system, you got 1 point each for that. So
yeah.
You got
I was just thinking of artifact. I'm picturing colourless.
Yeah, colourless artifact. So I was like, I can't think of anything.
Oh,
yeah.
I would have felt so good if I'd got that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That was, been great. I thought that would be like one that...
I love these card quizzes. Yeah, I actually do love them.
This is actually a really good one.
What do you mean, actually? Slaving away on this every week.
No, he just did very badly.
There's
last
look
time.
Of surprise.
But last time was like
there's
no
look of
chance,
surprise on Ash's face. Actually, this card quiz is
this
quite
is
good
actually
fun.
Quite
it's
enjoyable.
Quite good fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
We should do like a quiz night one night.
MTG quiz card night.
Yeah, that's
what by Seven Land Hand.
Yeah, there we go.
That wouldn't be too bad actually.
No, but nobody knows what we look like, and we are the best looking Magic podcast on the internet.
That's why we'll never reveal our faces.
We're like superheroes. Okay, so Aaron wrote down the answer to this and recited the question in like zip time. And this is the tiebreaker because it's 4-4.
Oh. So it's 2 for Grey Merchant, 3 then Erebus Emissary, 5 including Disciple of Phoenix, 6 including Return Phalanx, 7 including the Mender, 9 including Abhorrent Overlord.
9 is what I wrote down.
9? Or are you German for
9?
No,
devotion.
9? You going with 9?
9.
The answer is 9.
Yay!
Hey, everybody come.
We're not...
It was
completely incompetent.
Yeah, I've got all of the cards there that, you know, you know them off by heart anyway. You did really well.
Master of Waves.
I was hoping that the
so
Farika's Mender could have maybe thrown a spanner
off
into the works
of
the gold card.
I played a lot of Farika's Menders in my time.
Yeah, I've played a lot of all these cards.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe just like a Prophet of Krufix or something like that just to throw you off. That it's just like, why did he talk about that? Has that got a swamp bun?
No, we have drafted the living shit out of this set.
Of course. But that's good. That was a good
Perforos.
Hammer. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. 5-5.
Wow.
5-5. Good game.
Wow. Well,
good
played,
game,
everybody.
We're shaking hands right now.
Yeah.
Good game.
Wow, your hands feel good.
Stop hugging and kissing. I'm going to be doing the rest of this show by myself. What have we got now? Ooh, listener feedback.
Oh, we got some good feedback.
We've got
this
some
week.
Good feedback. We've got questions and all sorts of shit going down. And
do
now.
Can we hear some good feedback?
There's. All right, that's enough of that.
That won't make the podcast.
That would just be really irritating to listen to.
Just cut Aaron out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
didn't turn this penny whistle.
He did really well with it, and then he just took it too far.
Couldn't resist.
Listener feedback.
I've been banned from using my penny whistle for intro music to any of the sections.
We've snapped it.
The poor penny whistle.
Died.
Listener feedback. All right. So we've sweetened the deal on listener feedback now. So if anyone actually makes a comment and we talk about it or question and we answer it on air, this is on air, isn't it? Podcast on the web. On the pod.
On the web
as. Then they'll win a Hyper Magic Nerd badge. Just as easy as that. Before you had to win a big competition or come in and be a guest on the show.
It's now, difficult to be a guest on the show. Not anyone can just do it. Also, you can't just ask me and you'll immediately be on. That's not
you
how
can't
it
do it twice. Yeah. You can't do it twice either. No. In a row.
Ash will not get a second Hyper Magic Nerd badge.
He won't be back.
Coveted.
Yeah, they are coveted. You only get one.
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's Hyper Magic Nerd badge.
This is correct.
First commandment of the Seven Land Hand Bible.
I like how you harmonize then, guys. All right. The first question we've got is from Riley. Dear Seven Land
Hand. Hi, Riley.
Hello, Riley. Long time listener, first time writer.
Oh, that's lovely.
I like that.
I feel like Frasier.
That's an opener. I have oft marvelled at the tidiness of Good Game's front desk. Have you got any tips for the casual desk tidier? I think that was a sweetener question.
Oh, okay.
It's got a serious question. But I'll tell him something, Aaron.
I'll give you just a little hint. I'm not going to give away all my secrets.
No.
Because me and Dave have been working pretty hard on this. If you buy compressed air to clean out the inside of your computer and your keyboard, don't do it at the desk in which you work. Because I use compressed air on the Good Game's keyboard that we've been using for a year now, and it had disgusting amounts of shit in it, and it went everywhere.
This shot generates...
Including up my nose and in my mouth. Yeah.
This shot generates an amazing amount of dust.
It was just quite disgusting.
Chip and chocolate dust, and it was just fucking everywhere. I was so disgusted. I was like, maybe I'll just try this compressed air on this keyboard. It was disgusting. Anyway, don't do that. That's my number one tip for
desk cleaning. At the same time as doing that, Aaron also found a cure for cancer. It was by breathing that concoction of dust that was in the air. Yeah. Now immune to the
whole... Nacho dust. That's why nerds never get cancer.
Nacho dust. Yeah. Okay, so moving on. This is what really Riley asked. Also, what do you guys think is the most complicated magic card to resolve in terms of its effect on the game? And he added, I'm looking forward to the next show. High five, Riley. That's a good question. So I thought we could break this up, actually. I thought Ash might be able to give us a deal in standard about what he thinks is the most complicated magic card to resolve. And maybe you've got something from a more vintage perspective. What do you reckon, Ash?
The most complicated card
to resolve.
Definitely Storm Breath. No, not Storm Breath.
Storm Breath Dragon. It
comes in sideways. Like, you have to determine whether it comes in sideways or straight.
Yeah, you know. Just plop it onto the field sideways, and they're like, "Yeah, take
it." It's actually
four.
A pretty good question. Like in one of my games at the GP that was on coverage, there was at the very end of I was listening to Mono Blue player. At the very end, it came down to the last turn, and he attacked me, and I played Golgari Charm.
Yeah,
which gives all creatures -1/-1. It's not super hard to resolve, but like the combat, how it affects combat math is quite.
It made your opponent make a mistake.
Yeah, he like we had those like three or four creatures in combat attacking, and because. There was a couple of Frostburn Weirds in there as well, which you can pump up and down with their power and toughness.
Yeah.
He ended up not actually like killing one of my Mutavolts, which kind of changed the game to a point.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think, Golgari Charms has it's -1/-1 mode, can really mess up combat math and determining which creatures have died, which haven't, how much damage you've taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's probably not the most complicated thing, but it's definitely
it's a relevant though, isn't it?
Standard. Yeah, it's just something that's happened to me.
Because all the charms have all got three options, that would be what does my head in. I'd be having it in my hand, I'd look at the situation, I'd go, is this the time where I drop this, or do I hold on to it and use this other effect later on in the game? That would do my head in immediately, and I wouldn't know when was the right
time. Against a blue-white control deck, you bring it in because it it kills Elspeth tokens, it destroys Detention Sphere, and it regenerates your creatures for Supreme Verdict or Faded Retribution. And when do you pull the trigger on any of them? Because like, they could always have the other one.
Yeah.
So you don't know like whether to kill their D-Sphere now or leave it to regenerate your creatures because you don't worry about that. It's just... it's
a lot of options.
Modal cards are always very difficult.
Yeah.
With something like Azorius Charm, it's generally like, I need to put that creature on top of your library, or I need to draw a card. I don't care about your 2/2 that you're attacking me with. So that one's What's the most difficult modal card to do? It's probably Golgari Charm is probably the most...
It really screws up the
so going, math. Going vintage? Because Riley's a big EDH player.
Going vintage, he's talking about EDH stuff. There are a bunch of cards, mostly red. Enchantments, some artifacts actually, mostly red enchantments that cost 5 or 6 mana that just screw with the rules. Right. There's one called Warp World, which is everyone exiles all permanents they control, then for every permanent, reassign that permanent to a player at random. So you just like remove all permanents from the game, and for each permanent you roll the dice for however many players there are, and they get that permanent. Right. No! That's a different one. There's so many stupid ones. Warp World is where you exile all permanents everyone controls, then reveal permanents from the top of your deck until you have the same amount of permanents you had from the first one.
Yeah,
there's another one that reassigns all permanents to different players. I forget what it's called.
There's a red one in Standard as well.
Possibility Storm.
Yeah, that one's...
Oh, yeah.
Possibility Storm's
small
like...
Small novel on it. Yeah. Well. It's exhausting.
That one screwed up a bit. Like, I remember when I first started playing and like with what my friend and like... We were just both very new and like, this card's Possibility Storm. And we're like, wow, I don't know how this works. Yeah. And I had no idea about the rules or anything. It was just a chaotic mess.
Yeah,
it is. It's so hard to control.
I think I'm going to go with Knowledge Pool.
Knowledge Pool.
Which is a 6 mana artifact from, I think, Scars of Mirrodin. It's not the most complicated, but it's like, I love the flavor of the card. It is a Knowledge Pool. It says, whenever you cast a spell, exile that spell and the top 3 cards of your library.
Yeah.
Play a different spell from the pool of cards that have been exiled with Knowledge Pool this game, apart from the one you cast. So when you cast a spell, it's exiled into the Knowledge Pool. You can't cast that one. You can cast another one that has been exiled with Knowledge Pool that game. So you never cast
for
the actual
free,
spell
you've got
for
to pay
free.
The mana
for free. You don't have to pay the mana. So it's just... I know the actual answer for Standard now, but... There are so many silly, silly, silly cards in EDH. Off the top of my head, Omen Machine, Possibility Storm, Shared Fate, Warp World, Chaos Warp. There's just so many silly, mostly red ones because they don't know what
like
to
all
do.
The chaos cards.
Wild Evocation, Eureka, Show and Tell. This is stupid.
What's the Standard one?
The Standard one is the most difficult card to resolve in Standard is Thoughtseize. I think it presents the most amount of options to you that you can stuff up on starting on turn one. You're like, Swamp, Thoughtseize, and they reveal 5 different cards and 2 lands in the hand. And you're like, I have to make a decision that is the best in this situation.
Always Sphinx is Revelation.
Not always Sphinx is Revelation.
And I thought my advice was Thoughtseize, always second drop, not first drop, because you get one less land to look at and one more card or possibility of
that's
true.
Very true.
Anyway, so there you go. Just takes another
level. Maybe you want to resolve Thoughtseize before you want to play a threat.
Oh.
Sure, haven't got an answer to
like
it.
To follow up with a pack wrap, maybe.
Okay. So, Riley.
Thanks for your question, Riley. That was a good question.
Hyper Magic Nerd Badge going Riley's way. Okay. Also, we've got Angus Moore. He's said, hi, Seven Land Hand.
Hi, Angus.
Loving having a local Magic and Tabletop Games podcast.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. I was wondering what you think of the upcoming Magic the Gathering movie and the pop vinyl figurines. Are they a positive development or ruining the game? Now, have you seen any of this?
Yes, I have.
I did a bit of homework on this. Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk about first? The movie?
Let's
talk about the movie first.
I think go with the pop vinyl figurines first. Because it's very easy to just look at them
and make an opinion.
Yeah. There's no negatives to there being pop vinyl figurines. I like them. They're cute. Whatever. It's not going to bring any negative... to the Magic brand.
Yeah. I think I've got the same opinion of both of these things. So, okay, so that's cool. How do you feel about figurines for Magic? And have you seen them?
Buy a little Jace figure? It's cool. It's just like, whatever.
They've got two different ones. They've got like the cutesy little, more like Japanese manga-y,
Disney big eye kind of
look ones. Yeah. And that's like all of your Planeswalkers are looking like that. And then they've got this other, and they said they're only prototype ones. Because when I saw those initially, I thought, well, I don't really go for that kind of stuff. Where's your McFarlane miniature kind of, you know, really dynamic looking stuff? That would be sweet.
Yeah, like, you know, the Gate Crash picture where Gideon's like there and Aurelia's like slaying some thing in the background? That, but in a model? That would be sick.
Brilliant. So then they've got like the, they've got some sort of like, you know, super, you know, the Extreme series or something like that that we're talking about. And they are more... you know, realistic looking. Mm-hmm. However, they're very much the anatomical pose, if you know what I'm talking about, which is, you know, arms out, spread, and legs just standing there like, I am Garrick.
I didn't see those ones.
So then I immediately thought, I like the cutesy ones better.
Yeah, I like the cutesy ones. Yeah, I bought Game of Thrones cutesy ones for my girlfriend. And stuff
I could immediately say, after that, after seeing the two compared, I thought, I could see myself having one of those on my computer at work or something like that. So
that's cool.
And the movie?
They could fuck it up royally. Yeah. They could make Avatar: The Last Airbender style arrogant.
Well, apparently they did Dungeons and Dragons made a movie about that, and apparently they really messed that one up. And then apparently they had the money to go make a second and third one.
Yeah. They've made some terrible, terrible licensed films. Tomb Raider was like okay, but all the rest of them have been not great. Shit.
Just to expand on the producer that they've got lined up, there was naturally a release on Wizards.
If you say M. Night Shyamalan, I'm going to murder someone.
It could still be because this is the producer. This is Simon Kinberg, who we probably don't know, but we know of his work. He's been behind X-Men Apocalypse, The Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four wasn't great.
Something called Chappie and the Cinderella, Let's Be Cops, X-Men, Days of Future. These are all
He did Days of Future Past.
Oh, he's about Days of Future Past. Yeah,
that one's going to be fucking awesome.
Looks pretty sweet.
Elysium, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Oh, these are all like okay
Jumper.
Ones.
So you sort of see where he's Mr. and Mrs.
What,
Smith.
Okay, what I'm worried about is that they pander to the lowest common denominator, which is where the main character is Jace, and it's like he's getting bullied in high school, and he gets bullied so much that his planeswalking ability happens, and he planeswalks away from America, and then he ends up in Zendikar, and he meets Chandra, and he falls in love, and it's like
that would
a
suck.
Big soppy load of shit, and then they're like, oh, magic.
Well, that was
Garrick's like a big dumb brute, like jock guy, and Liliana's like the evil like wizard.
Yeah.
And,
he's like Wolverine.
You can see it going badly.
You can see it going real bad, real quick.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I got to with the whole. They're applying more imagery. Like the thing I like about the cards are that some of them have majorly sweet art, right? And I get right into that. As soon as they start expanding on it, it's like when you've read a book. And, you know, you've read the book, you've got the imagery all down, and then they release it and they cast the wrong guy as the main, or they set it all wrong and they just ruin the whole thing for you.
Honestly,
it's a massive risk.
And I think if they're gonna
do that with magic, they're really risking sort of clashing with everyone's ideas.
Yeah.
Like what you said there is just like the typical Hollywood American kind
teen
of
teen drama
slanted
plot.
Yeah. And they could really do that and just destroy it and break it.
I don't see how they can do it another way though. They're not gonna make a cool, edgy
Otherworld stuff. Otherworld stuff.
It's gonna be some shit. I cannot see them doing it well. Who there's not enough gravitas behind magic for them to take it, for Hollywood to take it seriously. It's gonna be a mess.
They've got a lot of material to work with, but I think they'll screw it up by going formula. And I think what we see of
what's
the story of
audience?
Magic is that formula isn't gonna. Yeah, exactly.
Intended audience is gonna be.
The only way this movie works is if it's like an MA15 plus kind of a theme. Yeah.
And it can't be. So last Harry Potter movies, not first Harry Potter movies. But they're not gonna do that.
They have to, but then they're not gonna do it. Appeal to all the 10-year-olds who play Magic. But
what
Magic is actually like a game that's played between 20 and 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the.
But they're gonna be catering to 8 to 16-year-olds.
But on the packet it says 13 plus, doesn't it?
It does say 13 plus, but it's.
But like, if you look at like the. Even in the story, just look at the people who come down here. How many people do you see that? Like, less than 15 years old.
Minority.
Not that many.
Almost
actually.
Next to none.
Playing Yu-Gi-Oh!
But that's
and
not
Vanguard
what Hollywood
body,
thinks.
Body
they
fight.
Go, okay, next up on our agenda, we've got
a card
game movie. It's kind of like Yu-Gi-Oh! It's kind of like Pokemon. What are we going
to
do? They go, okay, you want a male protagonist to get the guys in. You want a cute love interest. You want a bad guy that you all love to hate. You want a big jock guy that's comic relief. Done. That's a movie. Wrap it up in a fucking month and then sell it. That is 100% what it's going to be. I cannot see them doing anything else with it. That is going to be bad. It's
like
going to be bad for Magic.
All people that don't know about Magic, this is going to be like their first, like, you know, inside, like, look into, like, oh, what is Magic on? Like, it's going to pretty much represent the, you know, the community the, and everything that Magic's about. Because this is, like, people's first, like, you know, interaction with Magic.
Yeah,
and
this
is what they're going to see, some dodgy-ass, like, 8 to 16-year-old movie.
It's not going to be one of those, wow, I'm going to go out and buy an Iron Man comic, is it? It's going to be like a, wow, I'm going to laugh at all those guys that play Magic.
best case scenario, they do a comic book-esque serious look. No, they can't. Nah. There's enough material and there's enough good writers. But, that's the thing, sorry. There are enough good writers in the comic book world that they could write a novel.
Oh,
if you get the people that write Magic to write a movie, it's going to be corny as fuck.
It's going
to
stink.
So corny.
It's going to be the worst.
Well, there you go.
Jace is going to be like, I'll sculpt your mind. And then it'll be like, credits. And you'll be like, oh, what the fuck?
Cinema shootings. Well, there you go, Angus.
Yeah, it's just all suicide.
There you go, Angus. I think you've asked a question there that's got Aaron well fired up.
Jace,
he's broken the table.
Don't leave me, Jace.
Wrecked his hair, dude, running his fingers through it in anguish.
Garrick's such a jock.
Oh, my gosh.
What a great question.
You really sculpted, Chandra will be all over Garrick.
You really sculpted
then,
my mind.
I can't
stop him now. Of my thoughts,
they're
Jace.
Still just yammering on about how much they hate the movie.
Yeah. I'm a pyromaster.
I set you ablaze.
With love.
Oh, God. No.
Just imagine all the you know, the block mount things. And it's like, Chandra, it's like, she'll set you ablaze with love. Jace is like, he'll sculpt your mind. Garrick, he'll speak to your wilds. He'll call your beasts. Gideon, he'll be the champion of your justice.
No.
Sorry, that actually got me really riled up. I didn't realize how much I hate that idea. It's going to be so bad.
What are you doing?
I think Angus has got
a clear...
Can we
start Aaron Graham premonitions, please?
that's like Aaron Graham premonitions.
The Magic movie... This one... Okay. Aaron Graham premonitions.
The recorder.
Introduce it.
Oh, Aaron Graham premonitions.
The Magic movie is going to be a terrible piece of garbage.
Licking ass. All right.
Licking asp.
Angus, you got your value for your money out of that one, and you get a Hyper Magic Nerd badge.
And a free pass to the Magic movie that I will buy for you and then tear into pieces in front of your face.
No, he's got to go watch it and review it for us.
All right.
That's what he's got to do.
All right. All right. Reporter on the scene.
All right. Finishing up then, we've got the final question from a certain one, David Putz.
Oh.
Have you heard of this guy? He said, I'll ask you one that I don't even have a good answer to. And it is, what is a good reference material concerning the difference between good board control and time control? So what is a good reference concerning the difference between board control and time control? And I know David's written a very good article already about that subject. And I'd also like
Is he trying to get us to reference his own article?
I think he might be.
Maybe.
But also, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reference he will be here in a month to talk about the very thing.
Oh,
so
excellent.
I think a good reference for that is to tune in to Seven Land Hand, not the next themed Lovecraft episode, but the one after that, which will be starring David Putz himself, and when we can ask him to explain board control and time control.
Lovely. In my magic, as a serious answer to that question, in my magic readings, I haven't really found a good resource for breaking down the control decks and the different components of what you need to make a successful control deck. You'll find articles about tempo, you'll find articles about control, but like, not really stuff that balances the two and why they're important. Like, I don't know. It's a bit tough. Dave, Mr. Potts.
If somebody else had asked
that
question, I would direct them to David Potts.
Yeah, honest to God, that's what
I
would have
done. If anyone knows about that kind of stuff, it would be him.
Anthony Lee probably would.
I think David is probably the best, most mechanically sound.
Theoretical magicist.
Out of everybody that I know.
He's talked at me on that subject, and I've just looked at him with a confused face, kind of like a dog trying to work out how it eats some meat that's hidden in a glass sort of cube.
Oh, yeah.
That's the kind of fact. I'm just looking like, why when I lick the glass,
there's some kind of force field.
And yeah.
But I can see it.
Yeah.
But I can't taste
it. Like I can see the knowledge and I can hear knowledge, and yet I'm still just as stupid.
You're still thirsty for that knowledge.
I'm still thirsty for that knowledge.
Yeah, Anthony Lee actually explained to me this week that I wasn't stupid. I was... careless. Because I was going, I'm so stupid, I can't play Magic.
He's
this
quite
is terrible.
Good at
He's like, no, you're just careless.
Telling you, like, changing one negative into another negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can just sit there calling
No, you're not bad because of this. You're bad because of this.
So he's actually sitting there calling your names and you go, thanks, man. Yeah.
You're right. I am a cock.
Okay. Just someone who didn't ask us a thread by Twittering or on Facebook, but is a long-time listener and commentator in the store. And we've mentioned it before, and I think he's deserving a Hyper Magic Nerd badge. So I'm going to read his post, which was just feedback on the sevenlandhand.com website. It was from feedback on the last podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's the Meat Axe.
Oh, Mr. Yeah. Meat Axe.
The
Meat Axe. I love that guy.
Yeah. He said, oh man. So if any of you that haven't listened to the Trains podcast, check this
it
out.
It was actually very funny.
He said, oh man, that was by far the best top 10. Sorry, Aaron. That's okay. That cuts deep, doesn't it? Right in your face. Yeah. Telling you that. Anyway, oh man, that was by far the best top 10. Lost my shit so hard at the Spectral Train and all the 18 plus names with the 25 plus expansion.
Yeah.
Hyper Magic Nerd badge goes to the Meat Axe.
Yeah, that's really good.
Look forward to more comments next
my favorite thing was third petition. You didn't need to put that, you dorks.
we explained it all.
It's as if people who make train games are giant nerds.
Yeah, that would be surprising.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
All right, last section, quick fire now. Housekeeping. So next week, next podcast is going to be on Lovecraft, and we'll begin. This is the final countdown for the last two weeks before we decide, or Dave comes in and decides on a winner for the Big Seven Land Hand competition,
which we'll
cover in a minute. But the next topic will be a themed topic, and it'll be Lovecraft. So all of that shit with Cthulhu written all over it.
Who's Cthulhu?
He's one of H.P. Lovecraft's gods.
Oh, wow.
I know a bit about Lovecraft, know a bit about the games. Looking forward to that one.
That'll be a lot of fun.
More than I was trained. But moving right along, have we got any charging Badger updates? I know he's captured the hearts and minds of people everywhere. He's been touring the country.
Yeah, he's been roaming around. He's been seen in a few, the arsenal of a few planeswalkers that I've been dueling with on Theros.
Yeah.
One of them ganged up with a bunch of Triton Shore thieves.
Oh, right, wow. Big one drop time.
So just one drop on turn two, two one drops.
Yeah.
And I had Mulligan to five.
Asphodel Warrior, was he there?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't playing the three color one drop deck, which I have beaten.
That's brutal. Because all those ones, they add up to many.
Yeah. One plus one plus one plus one sometimes equals my life total. 20.
Yeah. So watch out.
But Brimez. Been on the quieter side this week. Apart from that Triton Shore Thief debacle, I've been destroying most people that have shown me a foil Brimaz.
So yeah, so in our bizarro world magic play, Charging Badger, he's the one you want.
Yeah.
First pick, Windmill Slam, bang, he's there.
It's a one drop. It's got pseudo evasion. It wears an aura really well. You can play multiple in a turn.
It's a one drop. It's green.
It's got pseudo evasion.
It's got green. A picture of a beaver splashing in some water.
He's splashing in the water. Yeah, he might be a badger. Like a little bit of armor. Who made that badger's armor? Hey man, what do you do on Theros? Oh mate, badger armor.
It's like...
And then you get charged over by a badger.
It's
like that. I had to go and see for my kids. I had to go see some stupid owl movie. It was called Guardians of something or other.
Miletus. Yeah.
Yeah. Guardians of Miletus. But you know, they're the one that's like an owl movie, and they all had armor, and it was a community of owls. I'm thinking, when do they have opposable talons or whatever? So they construct this finely, you know, manicured, beautifully tailored armor.
I just like to think of the owl as like a blacksmith who's just got arms.
Yeah. No wings.
It's just muscular owl arms.
So like my kids are there looking at this movie going, I think it was like a while ago. It's probably just Travis in his younger days. He wouldn't watch that shit now. But
goodness.
He was sitting there looking at the screen, go, this is the best movie ever, and I'm just getting more and more annoyed, just going, this is the just annoying. How do they make their armor? Same with
why can they talk?
Yeah, why can they talk?
Their tongue is not meant for speaking.
Why have they got a society? God damn owls. All right. Sevenlandhand.com has a video archive.
Oh, yeah. That's
we've got a video of the PTQ final, which we've mentioned. That's the last mention we'll have of that. But it's all in one place. Follow the page there. And we've got the intro deck challenge now. That's just been put up there. Plus all the other previous vids with our promo vids that got banned from Facebook. Not Facebook, from YouTube, because they had copyright material on it. But anyway, whatever. You can still see them if you go there to the Sevenland Hand video archive. Right, Aaron.
Yes.
Sevenland Hand competition. Progress. Entries are coming in. We're getting regular entries now.
They're coming in thick and fast, and by thick and fast I mean...
About six.
Six.
So it's there for the taking. Yep. Now get in there, because March is the anniversary of Good Game St. James.
Yay.
There's a huge giveaway. Listeners can win a copy of Zombicide. And I've spelt it right now on this, because they pointed out I spelt
it correctly. With three E's.
Yeah, with three E's.
Zombicide.
So you can pick up a copy of Zombicide, and it's so friggin' easy. It's just so easy. Just go to our Facebook page, which is...
Facebook.com/Sevenland Hand. That's the number seven. That's not part of the URL. Let's go again. Facebook.com/7 in brackets. That's the number seven, Land Hand. Facebook.com/7Land Hand.
Yeah.
And on the number seven, by the way.
And on the Good Games St. James Zombicide competition, which I'll keep pinning to the top of our page, we just wanted you to post what your best Good Games experience of the past year was. Did you need a snack and had exactly $2? Did you need a can of Coke and had exactly $2? Did you want a kiss from Dave and had... Yeah, anyway. So let us know. Tell us that story.
My favorite experience was when someone came in and they were like, can I get an Elspeth and a can of Coke? I was like, oh, we're doing a special deal on that at the moment. It's $50 for an Elspeth and a can of Coke. He's like, how much is it normally? And I was like, $50.
Wow.
Wow.
That guy should be immediately... That guy should be immediately posting that to the to the page. And you know what else? You also get a Hyper Magic Nerd badge. So even if you...
Just for posting?
No, not for posting. For winning.
Oh, for winning. Oh.
Yeah. Ooh, so if you win it... if you win, you get a copy of Zombicide and a Hyper Magic Nerd badge. Throw the Zombicide away. Wave your badge proudly.
Yeah.
So I think it goes...
Throw the copy of Zombicide at someone. It's quite heavy.
It's quite heavy. It's very expensive. It's a game you want to win. It's great.
It's number three. It's a
freaking
cool
game.
Aaron... Yeah. Tier of board game price scale.
What's number one?
Like Lost Cities. It's like $25.
Yeah, number one is just like lower price games. Yeah. Then you get mid-range price games. Yeah. Then you get upper range. That's where Zombicide is.
Number three, Zombicide.
And we're
resides.
Giving it away for free.
Yeah, for free.
Woof. Just for a story. So store manager Dave will be here in a fortnight to select the winner. That gives you literally hours in the shape of like a week and days and some hours.
Literally. Hours in the form of weeks.
Yeah, and days.
And days.
I don't think we can say that they haven't got weeks, because there's...
When is it, 24th it shuts? Yeah, oh, a week and a half.
Yeah. So don't miss out. That's what they say, isn't it?
Yeah,
don't miss out. Post now.
I'm just roping people into doing it, because I'm like, you can win free stuff, and they're like, oh, okay, cool.
It was amazing. During the week, we tried to rope in the girl who comes to the store that takes the food orders.
Oh, yeah.
And we said, you can enter this competition, and you can win a copy of Zombicide. She looks at it, and she's like, I wouldn't know how to play that. And it's like, yeah, it's got instructions inside it, and, you know, it's free if you win, so...
She's like, I wouldn't know how to play... I don't like either of you.
Yeah.
I think that's what she was implying.
She was trying to get out of the store at the time, but we'd locked the door.
We're like, can we buy some wagon wheels? And she was like, yep. And then we never got wagon wheels.
Yeah,
disappointed.
Zero wagon wheels in the order. Very angry about all of that.
I can get a wagon wheel right now.
Yeah.
I'd like to put a shout out to Hannah from the distributors. She doesn't listen to this. What else can we say about Hannah since she doesn't listen?
I don't know how to play board games, but I love listening to board game podcasts.
Did she say that while I was in the toilet? I'd gone away.
Definitely
not. That's embarrassing. She'll be listening now. So, is any other news, fellas, want to cover? Things you've heard of?
I've just...
exhausted.
It's a bit quiet on the tournament front.
It is very quiet.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on.
Well, I'm definitely
going... We've got a Super Series brewing.
Oh, yeah.
So far away.
It's quite a little while. It's like 3 weeks away.
That's a long time.
Super Series is going to happen, and Sevenland Hand is going to be all over it. We're going to have writers and writing people and video people, and this fabulous podcast will be involved as well.
We'll be there the whole way.
Will there be coverage?
Yeah, there's going to be coverage.
We're
going to feature match.
Like some... Just the finals or the whole thing?
Feature match. One match a month will be going up. Well, that's the plan.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow, we just lifted the lid on
Here
that,
we
didn't
go.
We? that's about that. We wrapped up another seven land hand.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Webster. Let me shake your hand.
Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, it's clammy and cold.
Yours is
like
hot and
like
sweaty.
Like a dead man's.
Like a G.
Yeah, like a G.
Thanks very much to Mr. Dr. David.
Yeah, high five.
Oh, that was a good high five.
Yes.
Yeah.
High five, Aaron.
Oh, again.
Oh, wow.
We're just nailing them these
days.
Oh, missed you. Oh, right, try
lovely.
Again.
Oh, no, it's, all right.
Too dangerous.
So to wrap up the show this week, I'm just going to give Ash a deck list. And are you sick of Tide?
This is going to be mono.
No, I know what this is. Here we go. I'm going to help you with a bit of...
Great merchants.
I'm just going to help you just relax. With a bit of aversion therapy.
It'll be over in a minute.
Okay, I'm going to get you to read out this deck list. It's going to be therapeutic for you.
Do you want
to
go out the front and do some fighting?
I'm going to help you. Just read each line, and I'll give you some mental tips to help you deal with each bit of this deck that is your enemy. Okay, ready?
4, Mutavolt.
Mutavolt, more like Sputavolt. That's what you say every time they play one.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Great. Yeah, quick fire.
Temple of Deceit.
More like Temple of Lame.
Receipt?
Temple of Lame. Get him. You're getting on it, Ash.
Two,
next one.
Watery Grave.
Oh, more like Watery Gaze.
We love our gay friends. We love our gay friends.
16 Swamps.
Oh, it's more like, oh, that's, oh, you don't like them.
Yeah, it's all
bad.
Boggy,
16,
smelly.
Methane.
Yeah. Smells like farts in your deck. Phew.
4.
Get the hang of this.
4, more like,
fuck, cliche.
4, crap rat.
4 loads of bullshit.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah, you got it, Ash. Well
fucking
done.
Mono black cliche fucker. I'm like, boo.
Boo.
Yeah.
Mono black, boo.
4 Nightmare Spectre.
Oh, yeah, the next one.
They're pretty good, right. Actually. Yeah.
4 Desecration Demon.
Yeah, Desecration Semen.
Desecrated Coconut.
Yeah, get him. That's what's in a bounty.
Woof. Getting the hang of this, Aaron. Yeah, this is good. Therapeutic.
Yeah.
I hate Desecration Demon so much.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a big D.
Just remember, Desecration Semen, every time they play it, you're like, oh, gross.
4 Underworld Connections.
Oh, that's...
4 Underpant Connections.
Yeah.
4 Heroes Downfall.
Oh.
Heroes
Downballs.
Downballs. Yeah, you got it, Ash. Yeah,
well done.
Nice one.
2 Barblight.
Yeah, that's already a vomit reference.
Yeah.
4 Devour Flesh.
Oh, Devour.
4 Eat Shit.
Penis. Yeah. Yeah,
Willies. 4 Thoughtseize.
Yeah, that's whatever.
Yeah,
next one.
4 Gray Merchant of Asphodel.
More like Gay Merchant of Ass Fondle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, did you just come up with that one?
Did
you just make that one up?
All the big setup for that one that I heard earlier today.
I see where you screwed up 4 Gray Merchant in the middle of the lift.
I forgot to delete it.
So stupid.
Is your deck not performing the way that your lover wants it to? Try Xenagos' Horny Goatweed, recommended by a store sponsor player, Ash Webster.